All right, guys. Welcome to solstice number 44. Actually, is it 44? Yes, this is 44. Come on in. We're going to be a little slow getting started. For those of you who've been here before, you know the format and that sort of stuff. For you new guys, what goes on here is what we're doing is we're going to be looking at what's called an ingress chart. And that is the time that we cast a horoscope for the time that the sun in the sky goes into 0 degrees Capricorn, which is the first day of winter, the shortest day of the year for the northern hemisphere, and what we consider the bottom of the cycle. That's why New Year's is near that particular time. And we have the big symbol of Christmas, of the rebirth of the sun, or the Christ figure. It all comes out of this idea of the solstice. And traditionally in astrology, we can cast what are called ingress charts, or charts when a planet enters a sign. And it should give us information just prior to and for approximately a year afterwards for the world. It's sort of like the birthday horoscope for the world. So I want to welcome you guys to number 44 of the solstice, Christian annual solstice readings. I've been giving this since 1973. I started out when I was pretty young. We've had just formed the Astrological Society of Princeton under the aegis of Professor Kenneth Natus and his wife Joan. And prior to each meeting, one of the members would get up and spend 10 minutes doing some sort of astrological delineation or a chart or something, right? And, of course, I got up and offered doing the solstice horoscope. And at the time, I demonstrated how you could put somebody's natal sun into the chart, you know, the position of their natal sun, and add their what's called solar arc, or the progressed sun position, and do a prediction for the person off of it. Well, that went over really big. The next year, in 1974, they decided to devote the whole thing to me doing a solstice reading, and it was on the solstice at that time. And it went on and it went on, and I was doing readings for everybody in the room. And I would start at 10 in the morning, and by the time we hit 1978, I was finishing up at midnight. Right? And it was a marathon. And by 1979, there was another group in Central Jersey took the overflow. So we would take 25 people, the Princeton group, and I would do the chart reading we're going to do today, and then I would do these personal 10-minute readings, and we moved it up as well a couple of days later to Flemington area, New Jersey, Clinton, Flemington area. And then when that overflowed, we moved it up to North Jersey. And we're doing the North Jersey chapter. And when that overflowed, we moved it into Manhattan. By 1985, I was doing 5 solstice readings in the New York, New Jersey area, including Cape Cod. And I was doing approximately 125 people over the course of that time, and I would get sick every year. By 1986, I would come home and be ill for almost a month. Because it was just way too much. But I was capable of doing these things in my young days as an astrologer. You know, I would go down and do like a workshop someplace, and I would, you know, do personal readings in between the workshop times, and I would work from like 9 in the morning till 2 in the morning, because the people who would book me wanted to pack in as many people as they possibly could, you know, to help the organization out or whatever else was going on. And I was quite capable of doing those kinds of stints. But by 1998, it began to really get out of hand. And by 2004, 2005, I began to cut back. So I cut the New Jersey trips out to just Princeton and up here on the Cape, because it was always very calm up here, you know. And finally, in the last, say, 10 years or so, I've only been doing a talk on tape. Now, one of the benefits of this talk in general is that at the end, I will pick two or three of you folks to do a little mini reading after everybody leaves. So you can put yourself in the pool for that. So those of you who have been here before have already experienced some of that, right? And some of you have been very lucky, getting hopping in a couple of times, right? But this way we keep that particular tradition alive. Because the idea of the soothsayer or the reader, so to speak, doing readings off of a chart like this is a strong tradition in astrology, but it isn't practiced on a day-to-day basis by the average astrologers in general. So, given all of that, this brings us to, like I said, number 44. And given my career in astrology, you know, it's a pretty long career as far as these things go for any kind of profession, I probably still have a few more years left. So we'll still see a few more of these things. Maybe I'll even get to 50. I don't know. But it might be the longest running astrological.
How about we say maybe you even get to 70?
Nah, I'm not looking for that. I'm looking to retire at some point. I do have other interests. It's an amazing thing in life, but astrology isn't the only thing. However, you're looking at a moving chart right now. These are the current conditions in the sky. 2017 has not been a kind year, right, by any stretch of the imagination. And not just from the political perspective. We're going to experience this year a major shift. It's already begun in terms of sign placements, right? Jupiter has already gone. Jupiter is this guy. It looks like a number four, right? Backwards, or like number four. Yes, number four. Right? Jupiter's already gone into Scorpio. Right? Uranus is about to go into Taurus in February. Right? Saturn crosses into the cardinals with the solstice, and it is the focus of the solstice. Right? And is a big realignment that occurs with this. Now, normally we have sign passages all the time. Styles change. People used to have mohawk haircuts, you know, and mullets and stuff like that, right? And then there were times when people were living in Volkswagens in the hippie days and stuff, and that was a nice particular era. Right now, the millennials seem to be putting their fingers on things, which is kind of like a redo of the Matrix. You know, one of the big things that's going on right now is the fact that you're watching a major evolutionary shift in general is occurring. You know, this business with the media is the genesis of that shift. Now, last year I spoke a lot about Gutenberg's press, if anybody recalls that, and how Gutenberg's press led to essentially the internet. I mean, it's this idea of taking information and taking it out of your brain and storing it someplace. Prior to Gutenberg's press, it was a rare thing because there weren't a lot of books. Paper was impossible to find. You had to dry animal skins. Right? And plus, there weren't that many people to read them. As a matter of fact, if you were able to read the Bible in the 11th century, you were a good chance of getting put to death for having pagan knowledge and not being a priest. You know, it wasn't a good idea. That's how discredited the left wing became. Or it was the right wing. I don't know. I would actually have to say it's more like the left wing. It was a spiritual thing that they were doing that for. At any rate, we're in an age now where this idea of offshoring information out of your brains is a critical concept. We're starting to see some of the effects of it, but we're not going to see all of the effects, unfortunately. So, just so very quickly, this is a transitionary year. It's not a great transition. It leads to a time that's even worse than you can imagine. Not necessarily in the U.S., not necessarily in the first world countries, although we're already getting tainted by some of this. But governments are going to get ruthless and poor over the next 10 years. One of the things we want to look at, let's get out of this guy for a second, let's shut him off. And let's go back to real time on things. Note that here's the sun at 00 Capricorn 0, right? And it is conjoined to Saturn at 010. So they're conjoining on the cardinal axis within 10 minutes of our. I've not seen anything like this in my entire career. And I overlooked something very critical, and that is that Jupiter is at 1506 of Scorpio, making the half square, or 40, half of a square, 45 degree aspect to this zero Capricorn business, and which means it's part of the same axis. So Jupiter and Saturn are there, but the placement of Jupiter and the placement of Saturn mean very, very different things. Like, really different. Okay? When we think about 0 degrees of the cardinal signs, Aries, Capricorn, Libra, right? That sort of thing, Cancer, right? We're thinking about the amalgamation or the blend of the cardinal sign itself and the sign that precedes it, right, which is the Canaan signs, the mutable signs. Now, the mutable signs are considered the signs of undoing, so to speak, right? Pisces and Gemini, also called Virgo, right? They're also called the common signs, right? And it's because they're transitionary signs. They take the cardinal material, which is always the first of things, right, and maintain it so it becomes fixed or becomes part of the general culture that we all get to rely upon. So the cardinal people break new grounds, right? The fixed people stop the breaking of new grounds, and the cadence, the mutables, run back and forth between the two, right? So, when we think of the cardinal axis, it's an axis, it's a cross, right? If we look at it on this particular dial, right, we see it. It's a cross. We go from Cancer to Capricorn to Libra to Aries. It's this big cross, right? The cross itself is where the action takes place. The space around the cross, the cardinal sign and the cadence sign that envelops this cross, makes the axis. The cardinal Aries and the mutable Pisces make the axis on the side, right? The blend of Libra and Virgo make this axis, etc. Right? So the axis isn't just cardinal. It is really cardinal mutable thing. Now, this mimics our consciousness. This is why we say the world is alive, right? Our consciousness is made up of our actual outer actions, right? The cardinal part. We take initiative. I pick up this glass of water, this bottle of water. And then there's the internal side, the motivator for those actions, the cadence signs. The cadence signs provide the instance to do something, right? If somebody does something very bad in this life, right, well, it's the cardinal sign part of them that's done it, but it's the cadence side that egged them on, you see? That's why we say that it's your self-undoing in the 12th house, or it's the things you must work for. Somebody else has to tell you what to do in the 6th house, or your health drives things in the 6th house. Your ideals are driving things in the 9th house, and watching Fox News drives the 3rd house, you know. But they're motivators, and they create action that occurs in the 4th, the 7th, the 10th, and the 1st house, right? So the blend of the two makes the cardinal axis. So we consider the cardinal axis to be a conscious point. It's a point where consciousness takes place, where impressions come upon us. Now that leaves a secondary cross. You'll see that this makes a big square. See it? In here. But there's a secondary square, and it's got big dots on it, not arrows. The arrows are point. See, this is a very symbolic dial. The arrows point action. The dots tell us something is sitting back waiting. It's passive. Right? And you'll notice that this square occurs in the middle of what are called the fixed signs, the unmoving signs. Now, we could say, if we were looking at things, the name of my astrology itself is symmetrical astrology. And if we were looking at things symmetrically, we could say that this cadence sign, this Gemini, reflects what's going on in this cardinal sign, this Cancer. We say that if something is at this first line here in Cancer, it reflects what's at this first line here in Gemini. It makes a symmetry. So we have a symmetrical arrangement or balance between these two signs forming this axis. The same thing hangs true with the fixed signs. Taurus reflects Leo. Aquarius reflects Scorpio, and vice versa. Scorpio reflects Leo. Aquarius reflects Taurus. In other words, the fixed signs only reflect themselves. So they represent the material or outer manifestation of the world, the stuff of the world, whereas the cardinal axis is the impetus of the world. So you might say that the cardinal axis is the yang and the fixed axis is the yin, right? The stuff that's acted upon, which brings us back to the cardinal axis in general and the solstice. Because look, we have the sun and Saturn on the cardinal axis. So Saturn is characterizing the essence or being of the world as symbolized by the solstice, whereas Jupiter is on the 45, right dead center in the fixed axis, also making an aspect to that cardinal axis. So we say that this is the material manifestation. Now, we consider Scorpio to be the second house of the Earth horoscope in the Northern Hemisphere. So in other words, because we're in the Northern Hemisphere, and we do want to have Cancer at the top of the chart, it's the highest point that the Sun reaches in the course of the year, and we consider that to be like what all the other frameworks should sort of hang on, right? The fact that being north and the sun hits its highest point has its greatest magnificence over all of us, and without the sun, we don't live, right? We can do without Mars and Venus and Jupiter and all that stuff. As a matter of fact, there's so many factors in astrology, you really can't use everything. And I knew an astrologer one time that just got rid of Virgo. it just didn't use Virgo, and it just didn't happen in the charts anymore. But there's a lot going on. So this idea of hanging the sun at the top of the chart being the most important, it's just like noon of the day, and it's noon for the year, right? And so we have the Saturn now at the bottom, the inside gestating, so to speak, the bottom of the chart. This is where Saturn likes to be, by the way. Saturn's coming home to his own house, and he hasn't been there for 28 years. You know, so it's like he's happy. He's really happy. Right? And Jupiter now is down there in that second house of the Earth horoscope, right? And we consider the idea that it's on the point of the most abundance. Material goods, material abundance is at some of its highest levels the world will ever see. So we have a very conflicting concept going on here. We have this major league, no, I'm not doing it. Stop, don't go any further, here's an impediment, here's some more bureaucracy, my ideas are at least 150 years old, and anything younger than that is just absolute revolution, and I'm going to run the world now. Okay? Contrasting with another person saying, why are you being so cheap? We got lots of money, we have lots of resources, we got lots of material, why are you squeezing me? All right? Because Saturn squeezes Jupiter. Jupiter doesn't like being under the influence of Saturn. Jupiter and Saturn rule real estate and business cycles. But Jupiter hates Saturn, hates his guts, because Saturn says no. And Saturn hates Jupiter because Jupiter says yes. All right? Saturn has fights with a lot of other characters in the zodiac. He don't get along too good with Neptune at all. He has friction with Uranus like you wouldn't believe, right? He puts the kibosh on Venus, which we're going to see pretty badly. With Mars, he starts wars and kills people. With the moon, he makes you old and puts you in a quiet place where nobody can hear you scream. But with the sun, he builds things. With Mercury, he puts out the law. You know? With Pluto, he remakes the world in his own image. And that's very important. Now, the last time that Saturn got to play with Pluto was in the late 40s. 1946 through 1948 was the last conjunction. Oh, no, that's right. We had the one
right
in 82.
On my son.
That's right.
I remember.
I'm sorry. I keep going back to the one in the 40s, because the one in the 40s, you're correct about it, the one in the 40s was very critical because we had the IMF starting, we had the rise of China,
right.
Israel, Gandhi gets off, and the rise of India. All the conditions geopolitically that we are dealing with today had two genesis, World War I and that period right after World War II.
Right.
Okay? And the one in World War I was ruled by Hades and Admetos, which is why the League of Nations did not work, and all international efforts completely collapsed by the time that Hades and Admetos conjoined on the Cardinals. But the end of World War II, we're still dealing with on a large basis. What occurred in your era was something very different. It happened in Libra.
What year did you say that was?
82 and 83 and 81. What preceded that was a great drop, financial recession.
Yeah.
Started that conjunction. But the one in 48 and 40, not 46, 48, 47, 48, this one was in Leo, right? Now, Pluto has had his run in Leo and has had a very good time.
We also had the war in Israel, Palestine.
Oh, there was the wars overseas were going on like crazy. Right, now we're going to come back to that 82 period because...
No, I mean in the 40s.
Well, in the 40s we had the rise of Israel.
Right.
You see, and we had the rise of China, the demolishing of Chiang Kai-shek. We had essentially the loss of all the great leaders. Stalin was becoming very ill and crazy at that point, right? But he was ineffective. He was more effective during World War II, right? Roosevelt was gone, and Churchill was fading into obscurity. I mean, it's 1946, he gives his last big speech and says, watch out for the Iron Curtain. He coins the term the Iron Curtain. There's a giant Iron Curtain descending over Europe, and we're going to have to deal with this thing. Thing is, the IMF comes out of this, the UN comes out of this, giant institutions. As the saying is, Pluto, as we all know as a generation, most of us have it in Leo, liked being in Leo. It got to show off all of its power, glory, and everything else. You know, it's like, whereas Pluto really belongs in Scorpio, really belongs under a rock someplace. He got his time and glory when he was in Leo. And Saturn hates Leo. As a matter of fact, Rupert Gledow, the old astrologer from 100 years ago, once wrote, one of his most famous things that he wrote, was never invite a Leo and a Capricorn together for lunch. You will live to regret it. You know? And it's true because both of them want to be in the center of the spotlight, but one of them deserves it. You know? One of them deserves it. And that's why, you know, you always have the Capricorn person can't understand why they're such a wallflower. Nobody wants to go out with them or something like that. And that stupid Leo always gets all the attention and is so bubble-headed. It just goes on like that. But the thing is that Saturn hated being in Leo. And Pluto had a good time. So you had this very incongruous conjunction that made all these big, showy, structural things that we've had to deal with since. One of the big upshots of the second one in 1982 was the rise of conservatism. Now, we didn't have a rise of conservatism in 47 and 48. What we had was a reactionary to left-wing politics a la Roosevelt. It was the counter-revolution to the Roosevelt largesse. You got to remember that the old Republicans of that era were so demoralized by Roosevelt and they hated the idea that one penny of their taxes would go to the largesse of the people, you know? And, but you know, that's the way it goes. They hated that stuff, and they've been fighting it ever since. But the issue that where we went to the right, so to speak, in the 40s, was the repudiation of communism, the Red Scares that began to occur, the massive military buildup that we continued while the rest of the world wanted to take all these armies apart.
Right.
And those armies stayed together up to those 73 wars and up to the wars that Israel was fighting in 81, was it 82? Was it 81? No, it was 82. It was the 82 war, right? All that stuff. These were the last vestiges of the large armies. That's why it was so much fun in 1991 when Bush invades
Kuwait
because of Iran, and they had this giant tank battle, which was right back to 1944 outside of Germany. You know, there's nothing seen like that in the world, and it's the last time we're ever going to see anything like that. It was very interesting. As we were looking at the charts at that time, Zeus and Admetos were forming on the cardinal axis, which meant that it was the end of big armies and the rise of small militias and guerrilla groups and things like that, which have now ruled the roost ever since, you know? But now we're into something else. As I said, things are going to change very, very quickly. How many of you folks remember back to when Nixon was first elected? Right, how many of you people were hippies at that time?
I don't know what I was.
I was an aspiring
hippie. At the time. Well, the point was that 1968 and 69. 68,
not Nixon.
Quite.
I was still.
Nixon gets elected in 68, and in 69, a chill goes through the air. And everybody cut their hair and stuff like that. And the hippie thing became a fad as opposed to a movement. Previously, it was a movement. But it became a fad. It became a more of a flash in the pan. The millennials are more hippie-like than we were at the time because they have much more bearing and cultural background to it. We were creating the culture at the time. So it was a chill, and this is a similar era that's going on right now. It's not just the United States that's going to the right. The world is going to the right. One of the first people that started this trend was Duterte in the Philippines. Guy came in and said, I'm just going to kill people because I don't like them. And nobody said anything. Hey, it opens the door. You know, it allows for stuff to occur. Now, right now, everybody's freaking out about the moral situation, right, with the males preying on the females, so to speak, and Judge Roy Moore. It's a political issue. This is not a cultural issue. All right? If it were a cultural issue, it would be worldwide, throughout all cultures and beliefs. So it's a political issue. Right? So basically, it's because the president was so outrageous at the time, and what is going on with Roy Moore now should have gone on with him then. But the door was left open.
Yeah, well,
nobody challenged it.
You're forgetting that we're revisiting some pretty nasty stuff that happened in the 90s.
Pretty nasty stuff has happened throughout history.
I know.
All throughout history.
It's not like this is only a reaction to our looking the other way.
Look
the other way regarding Clinton.
Well, they not only just looking the other way regarding Clinton and everybody else, just because they're politicians doesn't make it special, right? The whole idea that all of that was swept under the rug with the rise of pornography, all right?
Absolutely.
With the rise of public display of these things, it also just got swept under the rug.
Absolutely.
It's getting pulled out now for selective political purposes. Mm-hmm. And that's critical to understand because just like it is not a forever breeze that's coming through the window.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be so surprised how fast things will swing the other way because we're in a very fast changing time. Now, Uranus is going to pop into the fixed signs in February. And boy, that's going to really begin to shake things up. Then it's going to pop back out for a while. And then back in. So it's like, don't bet on the wrong horse too early. Bet on the wrong horse a little later.
You know, I think the Internet's facilitated this kind of thing, too, because anything can be a movement now.
That is correct.
It made it much easier for this all to come out into the open with no newspapers suppressing it or anything like
that. Well, it's a larger trend that's going on. It has to do with this concept of offshoring information out of our brains. And as that process occurs more and more and more, you see, this is the crux of the evolutionary change that we've been witnessing. The evolutionary change doesn't happen overnight, but there were a couple of really big milestones. 9-1-1 was one of the big milestones, not because planes crashed into a building, but because that was one of the crossing points where the Internet itself really got going and started establishing itself. And this idea of offshoring information, I constantly refer back to the movie The Matrix, where, you know, the woman needs to learn how to fly a helicopter, so she dials up the operator and says, all right, put a helicopter program in, and 2 seconds later, she knows how to operate a helicopter. This is exactly the way the millennials are living today, all right? They really don't understand why they have to go to school. If they want to learn something, they can just go out and get it. This is their concept, right? This whole business of learning information to get a mastery of it is what's gone out the window. So your memories and what occupied your memories is changing with the successive generations. And they're going to fill those spaces up with some very novel things. This is creating a lot more brain energy to go in different directions. It's as if in your house someone came and cleaned out and emptied 2 rooms and said, oh, we're not using this anymore, you know, and we got to figure out what to do with these rooms. Well, for us, it's like, oh, well, let me do more crossword puzzles, you know, or better games of solitaire or something like that. But for the millennials, they're just going to fill the room up with ephemeral material and push it out and fill it up with other ephemeral material, push it out and keep processing things that way. So what's the first thing that people do when they have such newfound freedoms intellectually or culturally?
They squander it.
They squander and go to junk. So that's why you see everybody's putting tattoos on and piercing mm-hmm. ears and stuff, because it's a big carnival out there. Mm-hmm. And it's carnival consciousness. It's pretty cheap. It's five and dime level materials and not Tiffany level materials. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you have an open park or a public square without any moral or cultural boundaries to it, everybody shits in it. And that's precisely what's going on. It's kind of like there was a scene in Mad Men where Dan Draper goes out for a picnic with the family. And they go up on the Hudson somewhere, nice park, right, and have their picnic, and they leave all the garbage. And he's throwing cigarettes away and this and that, and they just get in the car and drive away, and all the garbage is left. That was the way it was. I remember that. I remember being freaked out at the parks being all filled with shit, you know, because it was all crap and stuff. Because nobody knew how to deal with the public spaces. In Japan, for many, many years, even to this day, their public spaces are trash. Because people say, well, that's not my space. And they defecate on it, and they shit on it, and crap on it. You know, and this happens elsewhere in the world as well. No, it's not my space. If it was my space, I'd take good care of it. They don't get the sense of public ownership. And the same thing's going on with the Internet and everything else. We have to get a sense of public ownership of these things and public civic pride. Very simple. But that's not going to happen at first. It's not going to happen for a long time. Right? So let's delve into this a little bit. All this stuff just sort of brings us up to where we are. You see, in 2000... Well, first of all, we go back to that 1947, right? That set up the constructs, and that's because Saturn was in Leo and the Pluto was in Leo. The next one was in Libra. So it was social that occurs, right? The next Jupiter-Saturn conjunction is social and financial. A very, very, very bad, bad thing happened in the early days of the Reagan administration. And it wasn't this idea that, oh, we're going to cut taxes because we don't feel like paying. This is the way we're going to starve the poor, right? And don't let yourself believe anything else. Ever since Roosevelt, this has been the prevailing wisdom. is, why should my tax dollar pay to somebody who isn't working? And they don't get it. They just don't get it, that the whole concept of work is going away. This is the second industrial revolution we're going through right now. As well as an evolutionary period, we're getting rid of the concept of work in the way that it was conceived of by the capitalists. A very interesting thing. Nowhere in the U.S. Constitution is the word capitalism mentioned. Period. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of commonwealth for the public good, for the general welfare of the people. You have to remember, we're living in a political time where the people in power at the moment don't believe those principles in the Constitution. All right? Remember the phrase, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. It's a very good buzzword. In addition, remember this other phrase, precedence makes the law. If you stand well, stand still. These are very conservative principles. They are operating in this particular time. Now, I talked to Ray before this thing started. I said, hey, Ray, I need to get that Sibley chart, right? And the reason we needed the Sibley chart is that's the one of the U.S. horoscopes, right? If you see in our U.S. chart here, everything in the U.S. chart has to do with the seventh house. It all has to do with our partnerships overseas and everything else. And what's up on top? Saturn. How we started, Puritan country, afraid of everything else. The people that came to America were kicked out of every place else in the world. You know, I mean, there is a reason that the internet is filled with garbage at the first instance, because culturally, the U.S. really doesn't have a culture. We're an amalgamation of other cultures, and we had to invent our culture. We call it Uncle Sam. We had to invent Uncle Sam. We didn't have a native tradition here. We killed the natives first. But you see, in the U.S., we like to party. Venus and Jupiter conjoined, you know, it's kind of a thing. We are a country of largesse, Jupiter setting with the sun in the seventh house. But this is the most important thing to note here. Is I'm going to put this on a 360, even though it might be alien to some of you astrologers. I'm going to put it on a 360, and I'm going to put the pointer on the ascendant. And we're going to turn on the current transits. Now, looking at the current transits, here's the ascendant of the U.S. Here is transiting Uranus. Transiting Neptune is going across the bottom of the U.S. chart, the lower square to the ascendant. Now, somebody tell me what the ascendant would be in a horoscope.
It's the face you put forward. It's the environment. It's your physicality.
Personality.
Right, it's your interface, how you deal with your environment. What happens when Neptune is squaring the ascendant?
Dissolution.
Dissolution in terms of your interface with others.
And your identity.
That's correct. Now, what happens to people that have Neptune square the ascendant?
They're chameleon-like. They're confused.
They can be confused. They can be chameleon-like. They get robbed all the time. Their environment is porous. The door is wide open. Any thief can come in and take whatever they want.
Right, but they can also be amazing
spiritually high, great healer.
They can really walk in someone else's shoes.
That's right, but how does that affect a country? Are we going to walk in someone else's shoes?
No, we walk all over them.
That's right. And what's going on, what's going to happen while Neptune is squaring the ascendant of the United States?
Maybe we'll have a spiritual reckoning and realize what we've been...
We are going to have a spiritual reckoning when Jupiter goes into Sagittarius and conjoins that Neptune near the U.S. square, the U.S. ascendant.
We have been
that was going to be in another year. During the course of this year.
Builders of empire the last 120 years.
Correct. Saturn in the 10th house. Let's move rocks around, right? But the idea of Neptune squaring that ascendant means every crook in the planet now has an open door, and it's called the U.S. It means our relations with others are weak.
We're going to have no direction.
We have no direction.
That's right. Rudderless.
Rudderless, drift in the water, at prey, rats in the bilge, the water's going bad. I'm not kidding. It was a great ship. It was a great ship, but that's how fast. So it's a very big symbol on that. Now, we go a little bit further on this, and we have to look at something entirely different to just to push this point a little bit forward. Let's pull all these guys. No, wrong. Oh, I can't do that with this. That's great. So there's a bug in here. You can't minimize. Maybe I could do it down here. Yeah. Down. Which one was it? One of them worked. Son of a bitch. Get out of there.
The main one.
No, there is no main one. Well, I'm looking for anyways. I gotta get solar fire. That's what we need. We just need SF. Because we need to look at one thing in solar fire right now. Let's get ourselves an ingress. This is how you do an ingress in solar fire. There's our nice little ingress, 2017. So we're going to go and take a view of this through solar maps. And we're going to look at the U.S. and look at Neptune on the horizon. And where does it go? It doesn't get much closer to Washington. Yeah, let's go do this one. Doesn't get much closer to Washington, D.C., does it? All right. See, here's Washington, D.C., right here, that little square. Right? And there's Neptune on the horizon. Over here is Chiron also rising, but that's out in the ocean and hitting Cape May. They can have it. But this is critical. So the reason I bring this up is because the U.S. is getting Neptune squaring its ascendant. Right? And in the world chart, that Neptune is rising over Washington. So this is the year that Neptune happens for the U.S. Big time. So what happens in Washington during the course of this year? What does Neptune rule?
Swamps.
Well, they drained the swamp, but they filled it with septage. But no, the swamps, what else?
Land of confusion.
Drugs.
What else? Same thing, right? Drugs. Weakness. Unclarity. Yeah, some sort of spiritual belief is going on, some sort of cultural thing, but I don't really want to go to church under Neptune. Because it means I'm studying the wrong religion, essentially. You know, you want to get an aspect to Neptune to enhance something where you can go to a real spiritual belief, like something having a strong Pluto Mercury and a little Neptune attached to it to give it that sense of the mystical, the sense of that which we can't see. But to purely go into Neptune, come on, that's murders in a church. Poisons. Yes, it's we'll kill all around.
Also, deception.
Deception. What does it mostly rule, though? Scandals and media. Yes. Scandals. So, what do we think about Mr. Mueller? What do you think he's going to find?
Crap. Lots of crap.
Right, but his crap is not limited to the Trump administration. He's digging up crap all over the place.
That is correct.
Right.
That is correct. Whether or not he even gets the ability to say the truth is another story altogether.
That is really questionable.
It will be, because he's a former FBI, and that's for the thing from there.
So is Comey.
Yeah.
Well, Comey went four ways from Sunday, you know. He was extremely selective in what he was deciding to bring forth, and doing it at a time that was highly politically motivated.
Or he's going to bring it all forth and it won't make any difference.
That's a possibility as well. He brings it all forth, and the Republican majorities refuse to act on it, which would make it very Neptunian.
Well, I just think that...
remember, three-card Monty is right in front of your face. You know, the shell game? Here's the P, here's the shell. There's no little hole in the table. It just moves it around a little bit, and you can't keep track of that where the P is. So Neptune does stuff right in front of your face. Here, look over here. I'm going to pick your pocket. You see? Right in front of you. Gets away with it. Gets away with it. But will they get away with it? Well, they're going to get away with it this year. Everybody that's connected with the Trump administration has major material in the last degrees of cardinal signs. They've been getting a Uranus ride like you haven't believed, and they got Jupiter right on their ass, and they all cashed in already. The thefts occur early. They've been going on since before Mr. 45 was elected. All right, particularly through the Union Station Hotel, where basic sign is out there. Rent rooms here, and you get influence into the administration. There are so many empty rooms in that hotel that are booked. Foreign governments have been buying up blocks in that hotel and not doing anything, just buying it up as if it's holding a place in line to see the king.
I know, honey, but to say that and to not follow that with mention of the Clinton Foundation and the...
The Clintons aren't in power anymore, and the Clintons are not coming into power.
They are gone.
So, that's past. And it's not going to affect your future. But the people that are in power right now are going to affect not your future, but your children's future. All right? So the Clintons were something that happened a long time ago. And they happened when Neptune wasn't even that prominent. All right? This is in your face. And this is the shit in the ground, and your face smeared into it. All right? And you're going to have to live with it. And it's going to continue to happen. The Clintons are a smokescreen because it's the past, and you can't do things about the past. It's a smokescreen. It's just something to take your attention away. Over here, while I pick your pocket over there. Don't believe it for a second. These people have no more power. When Donna Brazile stabbed Hillary in the back, that was the end of that revolution.
And what do you think Mueller is investigating?
Mueller is investigating everything.
K Street.
Right. Mueller is investigating. Mueller is investigating everything. I don't put that past him at all. But do understand something about Mueller's makeup. He hired 16 lawyers. 12 of them are staunch Democrats. Strongest ones you've ever seen.
He's a Republican.
I know. Mueller's as Republican and as right-wing as they come. But he hired 16 lawyers who are tops in their field, and 12 of them are Democrats. Where do you think they're going to be putting their position papers on?
I just think that the corruption is not left or right. It's widespread and deep.
It is widespread and absolutely deep.
I think that any hope of pulling back the curtains means pulling them back on everyone. Not just the Trump administration.
The problem is the guys in power are not going to allow the curtain to be pulled open on them, which is why they'll pull it wide open on the past and on history and on things that are out of power. Right now, the important things in the world is that China is grabbing, the president of China is grabbing power in ways that are more than Mao even had in his era. All right, we have Macron in France, nice young kid, right? He's going to have a big fight with Merkel. And the other thing is, do understand something. When I say that the place has been looted already, when I say that, we gave the Green Revolution to China, We gave the leadership of the industrial world to Angela Merkel in Germany. Now, this is something important to know. Since 1872, Germany has decided it was leader of the industrial world and fought two world wars to try and prove it and was killed in both of those wars. This happened with basically a photo opportunity in Germany because our number 45 pushed a guy out of the way to get in front of the line. Merkel made a smirk about it. The rest of the EU said, yeah. And that was it. We lost our power. We lost all credibility as leader of the industrial world. Gone.
Right.
Gone. Right. So, and then the same thing with the Green Revolution. The Chinese were putting Solarium, a company in California, out of business, which had big breakthroughs in terms of the yields on solar panels. Right? In other words, this is a big deal. It's solar panels or any kind of renewable resources, well, how much of a yield are you going to get out of the damn thing? Right? And apparently, in solar, anything above 18%, you start making money. It costs, like, you know, it's 18% of the manufacturing. And the yield over the amount of sun makes it viable. And the current panels at the time were running around 21-22%, but this company in California had pushed it way up high. But it was really expensive, and it was completely funded through research of the government. Well, the Republican guys put that out of business. They said, oh, they're losing money, they're going to go out of business, they put them out of business. At that point, you'll notice that every solar company in the U.S. started trying to sell you panels on your roof. And not one of those panels was made in the U.S. The other company that went out of business was A123 Batteries, right, in Framingham.
Right.
Leader, again, was Obama money from the bailout. Got that company going, right, put out of business, and LG Chem bought them. And LG Chem is now supplying all the batteries for GM, Tesla. That's why Tesla's going crazy trying to build their own factories, because LG Chem is basically running the world. They own all this stuff. And we lost all of that, too. Now, it brings up something that goes back to the 60s. We're not talking about corruption endemic in the U.S., right? We spent billions on the space program, right? And what did we get out of the space program? We got Tang, Teflon, right? Velcro. All came out of the space.
Lasers
were much earlier. The lasers were done in 1960 for a different purpose.
Circuits.
But integrated circuits were one of the things that started coming out. If we had integrated circuits, we wouldn't have had Apollo 13. Mm-hmm. But they didn't, you know, those computers were pretty primitive.
Right.
But the point is, all this technology starts coming out of the space service. What did the U.S. do? Well, they said, U.S. taxpayer dollars paid for this stuff, so therefore it's in the public domain. Great. Did you make any money on Teflon? Did you make any money on Velcro? No. Only a few companies were positioned to take these technologies and make money on them, and they weren't you. And it was with your taxpayer dollars. Now, if we were a commonwealth, right, the U.S. would have subsidized the manufacturing of these things, made the money from it, and distributed it right into our taxes. Not cutting taxes, create wealth for taxes.
Right.
And this is the thing that, you know, underlies the very state we're in right now. This is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We're not supposed to be paying the government. The government's supposed to be paying us. Literally. The government should be a business in and of itself. And the way that it was conceived of was as a business. And the business was to make money on customs. We didn't have any concept in the United States was starting of this idea of taxing individual incomes or corporate incomes or anything like that. No, we only charge for the movement of goods and services. So if something crossed the border, we put a tax on it. And then we got really mad and started a revolution in this country because they would start taxing items. You're paying a sales tax on stuff that we started a revolutionary on. You know, the paper tax, the stamp tax, the thing that we're charging for tea. You're paying a tax on it, a sales tax. We had a revolution because of the sales tax, literally. Okay? So the U.S. government, the state governments, the city governments, and all this other jazz, they should be using anything that we put money into for research as a viable money-making operation. These are investments. That's silly stuff. Very silly stuff. So that crookedness goes way back.
Right.
You know? Hey, World War II. They gave the Kaiser guys that were building the ships and all that other jazz, the designs and all this other stuff. After the war, well, those guys made tons of money on materials that were developed under government payroll during the wars.
Right.
Now, prior to World War I, this never happened. The government didn't do these kinds of things. And when they did, it was for the public good. Things like the Smithsonian Institution or sending out, like, for example, the Beagle, when the British government sends, go out to the Canary Islands and things like that. These become for the public good. But in the era that they were doing it, well, there was no real profit to be made. But the minute it becomes profitable, what the hell is our government turning these things over to private organizations for? That's our money. And the minute that I hear some right-wing guy saying that we got to cut corporate taxes and stuff like that, no, we have to raise corporate taxes. You know? There's no free ride elsewhere in the world. You don't think that China is taxing their corporations the way we are? They own the corporations for the public good. Of course, it isn't for the public good. It's for the largesse of the rulers now, because this paradigm has been let out of the bottle.
What was your quote earlier about patriotism and...
is the last refuge of a scoundrel.
Right.
Yeah.
So with all of this hoopla, the Paradise Papers and offshoring and, you know, $21 trillion globally and the tax bill where they're trying to do a one-time 12%, it struck me that it's very appropriate that they call it repatriation, because these son of a bitches aren't patriots to tuck that money offshore in the first place.
That's right. Well, Apple is a great example of that. Because they said, well, you know, we're only putting it into these offshore accounts because the tax laws tell that we do it.
Repatriation.
So the minute they were challenged, they took it out of Ireland into an offshore account and put it in the Isle of Jersey, another place that couldn't be touched. Knowingly. Knowledge. With great knowledge.
Hey, Gary, the other thing that happens a lot is university develop things in sort of private conjunction with
right.
private companies
right.
and just give away the technology. Happens
right.
a lot in the pharmacy business.
That's correct. You know, and look at what we got in return.
No.
Right. These giant monsters
right.
were creating things that just squeeze us.
Yeah.
Like the opioids. Like the opioid epidemic.
The Tylenol.
Yeah. All of it. This is all true. And I think that paradigm at some point is going to have to change. Now, one of the things that's going to happen over the next 2 years, this is why this first year of the free ride, it's not a good ride for us, but it's a free ride for some pretty crappy forces. But it's after this year that Saturn starts applying to Pluto.
What do you mean free ride?
Means that there's nothing that Saturn is hitting that's going to be helpful for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So the forces of evil, so to speak, or the forces that are antithetical to the common good,
mm-hmm.
right, let's call it the narcissistic good,
mm-hmm.
right, they get a free ride this year.
So they're unchecked.
There's nothing to check anything. Right?
So Mueller's not going to find anything.
He's not done. And as I said, whether or not he finds something, it's the powers that be have to act on it. Right. So let's look at this chart a little bit. All right. Saturn Pluto. As the next 2 years, the Saturn and Pluto come, the conjunction begins. It actually begins. And the last two Saturn and Plutos, literally institutions did come out of these things. There were common, in other words, Saturn isn't all bad. He's just plain. For a year, I've been trying to figure out Saturn in Capricorn images. I've been looking at old woodcuts and stuff like that. And it's a bunch of common things. First of all, they always show vegetables and root vegetables, you know, that kind of stuff. Farming, agriculture, agrarian, right? You always see a guy in the stocks. There's always a guy in the public square in the stocks, so getting humiliated. And the guy is always talking to a person in authority, either a priest, local constable, like sheriff, or a ruler, like a duke or a duchess or something like that. Somebody in a bar or a public kind of thing. So there's always the public figure, like the priest or the person, the public person in charge. And there's always a guy, the common thief, who's getting humiliated. But other than that, everything else is plain. Implements and things like picks and shovels, you know. Strong Saturn people, you know, they look at things in a very simple and plain way. Like Bruce Schofield is Saturn rising, right? And one time he called me up because he needed a hard drive or something like that. And he said, oh, my shovel broke. I need you guys to give me a new shovel. That's all I want is a shovel. Very simple.
So what is all this going to mean for the elections, midterm elections next November?
Oh, the midterm elections. We're going to get to that. We'll get to the midterm elections. The possibilities of the midterm elections. But what I am getting to, though, is the fact that Saturn isn't all bad. He's mostly bad. But he does have a basic moral fiber and sense of what he thinks is good and bad. All right? He's harsh. And he's plain. And it's very, very simple medicines, right? You get something a little too complex, they don't really want to hear about it, even though they're the most complex folks walking around, all right? Now,
the last Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Cap was Mount Lusa and the thesis on the church. It was 2 months after the last one.
Interesting.
And I wonder if he actually did nail those theses. I mean, we go back to that. But because I mean, revolutions of Saturn and genders are fundamental revolutions. Right. They're not...
Well, that was against the church, which was a major animal at that time.
Correct.
The question is, what's a major animal today?
The major animal today is the movement of money. Itself. The institutions that move the money itself, not necessarily the banks, but the material, the things that facilitate that to happen, the markets. They're driving things. But then there's this narcissistic element that has crept into the whole thing, and that's the bad news. You know, the idea that people that are rich and have power are exploiting it instead of being humble about what it is that they have. And realizing that they have this giant engine that's going to do things in the world. But let's take a look at this. Let's take a look at the solstice chart itself, right? What makes this what it is, right? And we look and we see, well, there's that Sun-Saturn conjunction, right? It's very close to Venus down here on the bottom. You guys might be more used to looking at it like this. Right? There's that Venus. And you notice that in Washington, Venus is very elevated. And you'll notice that if we go to, what is that third chart here? That. Which one was it? That would probably be this one. Is that the one? No, that's the Washington. I want to find 45. See, 45 Sun is at 2253. And in our solstice here, the ascendant is opposing his Sun at 2058. His Sun is 2 degrees from the bottom of the solstice chart, essentially, for Washington. So he's at home right now. He is directing things from within. All that business with the tweets and everything else that they all react to is just part of the show, but not what he's doing. Bear that in mind. Right? Bear that in mind. That's like one of the first things you begin to see. Right? Next thing about this chart for Washington is that we have Mercury at the highest point. It's at what's called the non-adjacimal, within 40 minutes of arc. And we have, of course, Neptune rising for Washington. And that Neptune is squaring Mercury. What does Mercury and Neptune rule?
Media.
Pickpockets and thieves.
Fake news.
It's fake news, it's liars, cheats, it does rule the flow of media. It is the fact that it doesn't matter what's going through the... If mercury is the pipe, it doesn't matter what's going through the pipe. Right now it's just a lot of fluff going through the pipe. Right? So whatever goes on, it's beyond the concept of fake news. Whatever's going on is just... It isn't even the news that's fake. It's, everything is fake in that sense. In a time of Saturn, this is why it's such an incongruous chart. It drives me crazy. I'm really thinking hard about this chart for so long. As I say, I went back to medieval pictures of Saturn in Capricorn to see, from a visual perspective, what the hell is going on with this thing? You know, how is this going to actually break out? And then I began to realize that for the first year, the Saturn gets up to about 11 or 12 degrees, stations, goes back to about 3 or 4 degrees, and then goes forward. And it's at that station and going forward is the killer thing. It's going to hit two things this year while it's running. It's going to hit Cronos and it's going to hit Hades. Now, this brings up something else, too, that should be noted. Now, I'm talking about planets that don't exist for the folks of you that don't know my work. These are hypothetical planets put forth by a guy early in the 20th century. We call them TMPs. And he claimed to have found them through the actions of the inner planets, through sensitive points. And they work very well on a mundane level. They really do. So one of the things we want to look at is, let's go to the 90 here, and let's put up the TMPs. And note, you see that here's Hades, right, which means want, poverty, horrible conditions and things like that. Right? And here's Cronos, which rules governments, authorities, bureaucracies, everything that we hold high in dear. The real image of Cronos isn't the king on this on the throne. The best image of Cronos is in a movie by Fritz Lang, Metropolis. And there's a scene in Metropolis where the guy has to go, one of the workers has to go before the bureaucrat. The bureaucrat's not a leader. He's a bureaucrat. And Saturn rules bureaucracy, right? And the bureaucrat is sitting on an impossibly tall stool on an impossibly tall table looking down at the little man. That's Cronos, right? The idea of the bureaucracy taken to such a height that the difference between the high and the low is ridiculous. And this is going on. So the idea of Hades and Cronos together, if we drag the two together, our interpretation over here, let's get our interpretation up. Oops, get out of here. Oops. There. Atrocities, great mortality, sacrifice of human lives, great crimes of or against the government, failed conspiracies, great baseness and meanness, great brutality, poverty or lack, poor government, crime police, the basic formula for a criminal on the big scale. Mm-hmm. Now, this comes together in about 6 or 7 years. All right, I think 2027 is when Cronos and Hades actually conjoin, which means that we're on a downward slide for governments. Governments are not going to help people over the next decade, period. Governments are going to be authoritarian brutes for the most part. And during this particular time of the solstice, this first part, Saturn travels forward up to about 10 degrees, 11 degrees here, stations, comes back, and then stations again, crossing Cronos and Hades twice, actually three times. And the meaning of Hades Cronos by itself is the death of an old man, the death of an old leader. The fall of an old leader, right? And we're seeing this all over the place. The Romanian king is resigning. The Mugabe's getting thrown out of office right now. Old people
Zimbabwe, yes.
Getting tossed. The king of Thailand just finishing up dealing with his death. The emperor of Japan, Hirohito, is about to let go. This sort of thing. The Dalai Lama wants to retire, essentially.
have a question.
Yes. Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabian king is 83. He wants to go.
Is it a literal leader person, or could it be a leader like a country like the United States was a leader and now we're not?
No, literally when Saturn Kronos occurs, great leaders tend to die and go away. And this happens in all, a lot of areas too, not just government. But in particular with Kronos, it does have to do with government figures. But we're going to see this in the arts, we're going to see this in sciences, academia. A large turnover occurs this year, where an entire last part of the generation clearly goes away. So that's one thing. The next thing, of course, is the Saturn hitting the Hades. Now, all this year, the Saturn was Antistia Hades, which meant that the Saturn was over here, right, reflecting this Hades on the cardinal axis. And Saturn and Hades rules the alien, literal, like guy from outer space. But it also rules the guy who's an alien to you. Cultural comes in from a foreign shore or something like that. The immigrant, right? But the concept of the alien. And while the Saturn was reflecting the Hades, we get this idea that worldwide, the idea of movement of peoples, people who are in a refugee status, is not very good. And it isn't just that the U.S. is going to be building a wall, so to speak. It's the Mediterranean. It's the Rohingya, you know. It's a lot of other movements that are going on in Laos right now that we don't even hear about, where tribes are getting methodically murdered and that sort of stuff. It's the Yazidis in Syria. It's the fact that the Kurds are going to get squashed for their bid for independence, and that Turkey's going to probably come in there and murder all the Eastern Kurds and that sort of stuff. It's places like Armenia and Georgia. And Ukraine, which are going to get another round of repressions and things like that. So the movement of peoples is not very good. They're not having a good time. Now, Saturn crosses the cardinals, and then this year it applies to the opposition to that Hades. And when that occurs, we see a doubling down of these things. Saturn Hades by itself with Kronos, right? Let's just do it this way. Let's take the Kronos Hades minus the Saturn, and our interpretation now becomes, let's move this guy out of the way. Let's get him, stick him somewhere, walk in a corner somewhere. Let's bring this guy back. And we get the idea of losses through mismanagement of the government, to be abandoned by the government. The government does not keep its word. That will occur quite a bit during the course of this year. We get the concept of Saturn and Hades itself. We get famine, epidemics, severe damage, unemployment, sad parting, damages through frost, fugitives, severe sickness of long durations, unemployment, serious losses, serious obstacles, prison, alien, enemies, hostility, refugees, sadness, misery, trouble, and melancholy. Minus the Kronos from that. And we have mighty enemies, foreign powers of the government, army of occupations, misery caused by the power of the state, become a hostile state. Okay. So, this occurs. This occurs, it's such a sad thing, you know. As we start getting in, you're going to see the first pass here. The Saturn doesn't make it to the Kronos part, but hits that midpoint. It hits the Hades twice. First time will be in mid-February. Second time is going to be in mid-June. Third hit, and it hits the Kronos after this, will be in November, with the final hit being in the end of December of 2018. And so, like I said, it occurs for the whole year, this misery. Then the Saturn leaves altogether, and when the Saturn leaves altogether, it comes to our friend Pluto and makes this giant run with Pluto. The run with Pluto is going to be in 2019 from April through September. One continuous Saturn-Pluto thing, which is another thing I hadn't seen in years, you know, continuous run like that. Now, this is coupled with something else that we're not seeing very clearly. I'm bringing up this misery business, this misery index, so to speak. Because if we look at Haiti, the Neptune, right? The Neptune's running back and forth like this. And opposite it is the Uranus. Now, Neptune and Uranus there are two combinations that rule death in astrology for the most part. One is Mars and Saturn. It means the cessation of muscle movement. The heart stops. Well, as my father, I would ask my father, how'd that person die? My father would say, well, his heart stopped beating. You know, and you know, it was this idea of a joke. But it's really true. Your heart stops beating. Saturn and Mars. The other kind of death is Uranus and Neptune. Because it means the cessation of consciousness. To suddenly lose consciousness or to be pushed into the beyond, literally. And the Neptune and Uranus, they run together for the most part this year. I could show these on graphs after we have our break. But you'll note that the Neptune and Uranus, they've been running in a half square, 45, and they begin to run with Vulcanus mid-year from May through August, which means that fated deaths or forced deaths or deaths at the hand of great powers begins to occur. And then finally that begins to reach a peak as we go into the end of the year and into 2019. So, as I said, the first part of this year has a free run. There's nothing to stop these combinations. Normally, we have something that balances it on the other side. Oh, Jupiter's doing something good. No, Jupiter's playing down there in the fixed signs. He's putting money into the coffers of large institutions. Mm-hmm. And that's all he's doing. This whole year, until he breaks sign, right? Here's Jupiter, he's flying on down, right? And you know, he's like in Scorpio, he's flying on down. We get him out, and he gets into Sagittarius, and he begins his run onto Neptune by square, and all of a sudden we start having religious issues, big time. So, when Jupiter begins its run on Neptune, which is the only next thing he's going to hit, and it isn't for another like year, right? It's going to make for big bubbles, big congestive speculations, which is, again, incongruous because at the same time Saturn will be conjoining Pluto, which is just the opposite of a speculative bubble. So it could mean all the scandals crash at once, like lead balloons falling out of the sky. But it's not this year. That's the first thing.
What do you mean by religious issues?
Every time Neptune gets hit by Jupiter, right, it expands people's ideas about what a religion is and what it should be, etc., etc. It's the expansion of religion. Religion is opening up. It's bringing in new adherence to whatever belief system it is. And oft times, we get some really horrible fights and horrible wars occurring under Jupiter-Neptune combinations, if they're coupled with warlike combinations, because it means, oh, my ideals are better than your ideals, you know? So if it isn't...
It could be like academic or political...
It could also be very strong in academia. Yes, yeah. It could be the... the breaking down or the large things like Harvard with big endowments and stuff like that, and getting challenged for their money, you know, or scandals coming out of that. But one way or another, it's going to be in the realm of belief systems because it's in Sag and Sag Pisces, but it will also affect the money markets. Now, before we break, let's look at the cardinal axis itself. This is the 90-degree dial. This reduces hard aspects to conjunctions, and trines are kind of invisible on this thing, unless you know how to look for them. But we're not looking for soft aspects to relieve things. We want to see the dynamic material, the things that are causing events. And we look here. This is the cardinal axis. This is the world itself. We have the Sun, Saturn, conjoining on the cardinal axis, which tells us it's heralding an era of austerity on one hand, at a time of great abundance. Why do we need to be austere at a time of great abundance? Right? The other thing is you'll notice is a line between Neptune and Pluto. Neptune and Pluto means sneaking changes. Things occur and the implications of which we don't see until far into the future. So if I drag Neptune over to Pluto, right, it will read, the general world faces changes where the meaning is still not known. Changes which are not noticed on the surface. Sneaking transformations. Changes whose meaning it only is recognized in the future. Secrecies. And it stands with Saturn. And it stands with the cardinals. It stands with the sun. And it stands with Jupiter. And if you'll note that when I go on to the actual midpoint, it pulls in Vulcanus and Admetos. The fact that it stands with Saturn and the Jupiter indicates that these things have to do with buildings, businesses, and the effects of the financial economics going into the future. Sneaky changes are going on. And I said right off the bat, they're looting the Bank of America, so to speak, and I don't mean the company. I ain't kidding. I'm not kidding. Right? And then nobody's going to wake up for this for quite a long time. You wonder why Jared went down with Munchkin there.
Yeah.
Went down. How do you pronounce his name? Munchkin.
Yeah.
Right. Went down to visit Fort Knox. They were trying to figure out how many truckloads they could get out. I'm not kidding. All right, now if we take Admetos and Vulcanus, that's Admetos. That's Vulcanus. Right, it says here, the general world is treated harshly by destiny. The general world has to show great powers of resistance. The general public insists on give and take the hard way. Mighty obstructions, compression, forming of blocks or boulders, hardening, to be tempered, the state of hardening, buffets of fate, in the forge of fate. And if we minus Saturn from the combination, slowly forming blows of fate, slowly rising period of destiny, to be tested by fate for a long time. Now, we have to couple this with Neptune and Pluto, which means nobody even sees this for a very long time. This is happening in secret, in front of your face, but in secret. Right? This concept of this blows of fate, these strong buffets going on. Now, there's two sides to this thing. If we take the Neptune and Admetos minus the Saturn, it's a slow-forming blow of fate. But if we take the same combination and minus Jupiter, right, it's to escape great blows of fate, to be lucky to escape. So, it tells us there's two places this is forming. When it comes to the material world and the largesse, right, the second house of the Earth horoscope. The material stays. The world still produces. More goods get made. Money is flowing like crazy. But when we get to the consciousness of the world as being, everybody is acting as if they're poor as church mice. Everybody is acting as if they have nothing. Right? Now, a good example of this is the jobs reports, right? We get these jobs reports coming out there, great, right? Oh, we got no employment, everybody has a job, right? And all this other jazz, and everybody says, well, wait, I'm only working part-time for minimum wage. I want a full-time job. They say, well, there's plenty of full-time jobs out there if you have the skills. Mm-hmm. These things are expanding like crazy. But you don't have the skill to take these $150,000 a year jobs. Period. Right? Neither does 3/4 of the U.S. working force because they were never trained for these kinds of jobs. They require thinking. There is no more factory labor anymore. There's never going to be any more factory labor. Because not only are the machines going to make the machines, but the machines are going to design the machines that make the machines. This is the second industrial revolution. We don't have to work. Period. But we're of a consciousness that's 150 years ago that says that, oh, well, we have to create jobs and work for everybody. You have all these people that are poorly educated, poorly trained, and they don't have a job, and they're working for minimum wage. They put number 45 in power because number 45 is someone to get you a job. And the Republicans are going crazy. We're going to cut taxes to create more jobs. There are enough jobs. There's more than enough jobs. That's not the issue. The issue is the skill set. The issue is the skill sets. That's not creating jobs. What are you going to do? Have more hamburger flippers? You know? This is the thing. So we have two points of view here. We have a poverty-stricken point of view, which is the consciousness of everybody and the direction of the world. And then we have the reality of it, which is there's a lot of stuff going on. So as that first interpretation said, we want to do it the hard way. We have everything handed to us, and we want to do it the hard way. We could have done it the easy way, but this isn't the time that we live in. We don't get lucky like that. Now, the baby boomers were lucky in general because they missed all the horrible combinations between World War II and now. But the millennials are not so lucky. They have to transition the world into a new world. Now, so we can see that the implication of this year is miserable for the people of the world, but all the powers that be get a free ride. And we can see that this combination indicates that everybody operates without being seen. You know the old term about the devil has busy fingers and works 24/7? You know, it's like termites in the house, constantly eating the wood, constantly working away. You don't see what happens until the house falls down. That's going on right now. And that's going to continue. And that is worldwide. It's not just the U.S. We just are, as a country, we got Mars squaring Neptune and stuff like that. I mean, we're just blatant people. So we're just wearing it on our sleeves, you know. We're just like, we made ours the president and stuff like that. But this is worldwide. Guys like Putin didn't come out of a vacuum.
Yeah.
Yes.
This description of what's happening implies that there's an intelligence someplace running it.
Yeah.
And so where is that?
It's not. It's a collective intelligence. When you take large groups, right, and start doing large number of theories on them and stuff like that, it's like the pachinko machine. You always get the bell curve. No matter how many balls you drop in the thing, some of them are going to go way out here, and some of them are going to go right on the top of the bell, but it always makes a bell curve. So the
collective greed.
The collective consciousness is a living entity. When I was a kid, I used to always have to get them, because I came from New Jersey, bad mosquitoes. They could really whack these mosquitoes, because boy, if they ever got their proboscis into you, you had a big welt. They were New Jersey mosquitoes. They live on garbage all day, you know? And so you got really good at swatting the mosquitoes, but I never got mad at the individual mosquito. It was annoying me all night. I got mad at the species of mosquitoes, because to me it was a single entity with a single mind. So we think of like wild horses. Well, yeah, or a group, or the herd. The herd has a single mind, but every individual is acting out, just like all the cells in our body. If I move my hand like that, all those cells have to move like that. They have no choice. Right? But individually, they all think they have a different life. You see? So there's the collective expression of things. And yes, our collective expression right now is pretty grim. Why do you think you've all been so stressed all year? We're all getting ready for this loss of consciousness. You might as well just get drunk. I mean, no, really. Saturn rules alcoholics along with Neptune. Saturn and Neptune together is alcoholism. Right? It means you're blotting out reality. You're distorting reality.
That's a big article in ARC this last time about how there's more alcoholics over 65 now.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. You know, and there's a thing, that Neptune and Admetos thing with the drugs is another story altogether, because here we have Neptune and Pluto, right, which also is the implication of the pharmacy business, drugs in general, Oxycontins and all that other jazz. The implications of what's going to happen to all of this epidemic, nobody knows what comes out of this. What happens when you institutionalize an entire culture into taking a drug to keep a single couple of companies going? Mm-hmm. But they manage to do things. I mean, you know, look, Massachusetts just legalized marijuana, and the states and towns are going through their own thing of, you know, whether it should be legalized or not. And you got to remember, how come pot was legalized in the first place? Because DuPont DuPont wanted to sell rope to the Navy and wanted to kill the hemp industry. You know, and DuPont was so stupid in 1937, they still thought they had sailing ships they were going to sell rope to. Because the Navy was still buying the same amount of rope it was in World War I, but they were just stockpiling it, you know. I mean, this is saturnine thinking, you know. So they make this whole class of drugs. They actually make drugs themselves have this bad stigma. You're a dope head, you're a dope. That wasn't until 1918 when the first cocaine epidemics were occurring and stuff at the turn of the century. And then 1980 was the first heroin epidemics and stuff. And these were like really small, really tiny. Everybody was drunk in America. This America was known for being a drunk country. Mars squares Neptune. You know, I mean, you couldn't attend a meeting, a business meeting, without having a drink of apple cider. Strong, you know, cider. America, that's what we did with our apples. Johnny Appleseed was an alcoholic. You know, it was the idea that apples were made to make cider because he couldn't eat apples normally because they were all misshapen. They're all crab apples. It isn't until the 20th century that they figured out how to hybridize apples and make them good fruit for you to eat. It was all used for alcohol, you know, like the Russians with potatoes. They don't eat the potatoes, they make alcohol with it. So, just standing on the cardinal axis, right, we have these two giant views. We've got the secretive view and the buffets of fate that we're not even going to get to see too clearly. We have this largesse in the world, and it's getting more, right? And then we have the actual world itself, and it's getting creepy. Really creepy. Now, if I take this thing and I begin to spin it through its paces here, right, we go 22 and a half, we see Uranus and Cupido and Cronos. Now, this is a small angle. This is a half of a half of half square, right? And basically, we have the idea that the Cronos is the focus. If I put that pointer on the Cronos, you'll see a few other things which we're going to look at. But the idea is that Uranus and Cupido has to do with the unusual family, the unusual corporation, the tech corporation, something that works with electronics and things like that. Hey, they're part of things. You know?
Couldn't that also be the communities on social media?
Yes. Yes. We go to 22 and a half to this thing. We go to the other 11 and a quarter. And here we get Uranus running with Poseidon. Now, that tells us that Poseidon and Cupido are running in a half square. But they're getting connected to the cardinals through Uranus. Uranus, Poseidon rules movies, television. It rules literally the truth. Even though it rules movies and TV, Uranus and Poseidon is the only planetary picture that says this is the truth. Motion pictures, enlightenment, to carry out propaganda, general public incited by an idea, mental alertness, light propaganda, cleansing, enlightenment, propaganda, moving pictures, television, signs of life, to be lively or be alive, mental tension, mentally alert, the touch, the torch bearer. But it rules the truth. Now, Cupido
runs...
When
does that come in here?
That is now. It is in place.
Okay.
Now, Cupido and Poseidon are running in half square, which is a congregation of the faithful. Right? Cupido and Poseidon is the general religious community, sects, churches, congregations, religions, philosophical, mental, spiritual community, the congregation of the faithful. And we see that the faithful are running with Cronos and Vulcanus, which is the power of the state, and running with Zeus, which is guns and firearms and things like that, and running with Neptune and Admetos, which also rules drugs. Pretty weird. Something's weird going on in the churches. I don't know. They're having taking drugs and getting their guns out and sacrificing babies. I'm not sure. But this is a big deal, though. The fact that Cupido is running in half square with Poseidon onto the cardinals at the midpoint of Saturn and Venus does indicate that there is a fundamentalist movement that is pretty weird in terms of its belief system coming forth. You know? I mean, when people in Alabama say that the guys in Washington hate them because they're Christians, it's pretty weird. Mm-hmm. You know? So let's look at Saturn and Venus, right, which rules divorces, separation of loves, love separation, sorrow, illegitimate births, uninterrupted harmony, passing affections, right, is running with Cupido, which is to be deceived by a promise of marriage. passing harmony with associates, to be impoverished, misalliance, right? And Saturn and Venus running with Poseidon is going to be a bad education or an education about such things, right? Disturbed religious harmony, disturbed harmony among educators or between teachers and pupils, sorrow of separation between the teacher and the pupil. So what we get here is the idea that something nasty is going on with this church concept. And it's to the point where it's expressing itself with people walking into them with guns and killing everybody. I mean, that isn't the way for a loving God. Alright? This just isn't the way for a loving God. So, and it, this is a year where this kind of gets worse. Okay? And that's right there. I mean, that's... Remember, do understand there are years where I said the world is going to be wonderful and great. There have been years that I am not a Pollyanna, doom and gloom astrologer. I actually do look for the best in human nature, you know, and I do sense that human nature has a lot going for it, but there's a lot of crap going on here. So locally, before we break, right, locally, let's go and look at the meridian for the U.S. In the solstice chart, because remember, all of these things I've been talking about is worldwide. Let's get a little more specific here. Right, and on the midheaven for the U.S., the midheaven of the U.S. runs with the moon by half square. Right, so our feelings are most important. How we feel about things as a country is going to be our guiding principle, not whether it's real or truthy or anything like that. Now, the moon is not deceptive like Neptune, but the moon goes by its feelings. So it's hard to dissuade somebody that has a strong belief system that's generated by the moon. It's emotionally based, right? And that means that fear drives a lot of things because your fears always come through the moon, and the moon is running with Mars. And Mars has the two, its two moons are Phobos and Deimos, which is fear and panic. So this drives Mars. Mars does well when he remains calm. But Mars is the guy that doesn't remain calm. Mars is the guy that is Yosemite Sam shooting the gun. You know? So we look at the midheaven for the U.S., right? We see that it's the midheaven's running in half square, that Mars and Moon. And we also see that the people of the world are armed to the teeth. The people are armed. Moon, Mars. The Moon is the people, Mars are the guns. Right? We see that the midheaven for the U.S. is connecting the Poseidon and Cupido to the local ascendant. So this is the place of the churches. And where the churches are going to be a real big deal. And we also see that the midheaven of the U.S. runs with Saturn and Neptune. We're all depressed. It's bad. See, Saturn and Neptune, right, is general epidemics, serious sickness in the family, sickness and pestilence, treacherous diseases of long duration, matters that last a long time, chronic conditions and habits. I just want to make a side note about that, is you'll note that Uranus in the node stands on that picture in general for the world. It's not just the midheaven for the U.S. The Uranus in the node stands on that picture. And, of course, there's a plague evolving in Madagascar, if you haven't noticed, that makes Ebola look pretty tame. And they're having a hard time containing it to Madagascar because the people, what are they doing that's spreading it around? They're insisting on having gathering together and having communal meals. When they're sick, they're leaving the hospital because they feel better, and then they go out and then everybody gets sick at the meal. And so they're just waiting for this thing to jump out of the country. But this is the latest pandemic. And it shows in the charts that these things move very rapidly. But from our perspective, though, it's the chronic conditions, habits, matters that take a long time. It rules depression. Saturn and Neptune distort reality. Okay, they distort your sense of time. Basically, you're either freaking out about a possible future that may or may not happen, or you're regretting some past that doesn't have any consequence on today. So,
what's the Poseidon involved in this?
Yes, this Poseidon, because the Cupido is running in half square to the Poseidon. So if I take this to a 22 and a half, see, if I go 22 and a half to the midheaven, we get the ascendant Poseidon, and we get Jupiter and Neptune on axis for the U.S., which is the corruption that's going on that I mentioned all along. As a matter of fact, see, if we, it's a very interesting picture. If we go to 22 and a half to the cardinal, to that axis, right, and so we can do it this way. Right? We start getting the idea that Neptune and Jupiter, which is large scandals, are running with the U.S. So if we take the Neptune, Jupiter minus the MC, right, and a spendthrift speculator to squander, and that's precisely what the U.S. is going to do. So we have the midheaven running with Neptune and Saturn, which is very depressing, and Mercury and ascendant and Cupido. Now, Cupido and Mercury is really nice. It rules music. It rules dancing. You know, people with Cupido and Mercury, they just can't keep their feet still. They got to get up there and dance and whatnot. So maybe we'll all get all of our ills out by dancing. But I'm not too sure about that. I just think there's a lot of communications about spirituality at a very depressing level.
So demonstrating.
This isn't the picture of demonstrations. This is a picture of demonstrations getting shot at and killed and whatnot. The demonstration is the Uranus pictures that were the real things. And we remember, the Uranus comes into the cardinals through Cupido and through Poseidon. So demonstrations are going to be about the truth, media, and religion. Now, if we go to the ascendant of the U.S., right, we see that the ascendant is running with Mercury and is squaring the Neptune. So this is the place where the lies are propagated. We see that the ascendant for the U.S. stands with Mars and Zeus, which rules weapons, guns, right? The military. Zeus is an octave of Mars. Right, creative activities, incentive creative work, or forced creative work, creation, dangers of fire, energetic work, creative activities, firearms, shooting flames, machines, military technique, officers, to burn, to fire, to heal, to heat, leading activities, and minus the ascendant is the place where this happens. Battle action, conflict, to be threatened by firearms, acquaintance with soldiers, officers, machinists, or technicians. Energetic action of others or against others. What are we heading towards? No, I don't think we're going to have a nuclear war. The combinations for that aren't here. The Pluto is too muted by Neptune. If they shot a nuclear, it would fizzle. So if North Korea decided they want to bomb Chicago, right? You've got to remember, we have 4,000 missiles. We got four. it's a thing. I shoot one over, it'll not work too well. And because it doesn't show why, we don't have pictures here that show widespread destruction like that. We have pictures that show widespread misery. We show pictures for widespread oppression. You know, the deliberate kicking of somebody's teeth with somebody else's heels going on all over the place here. Except for this one picture here. This is a picture where we really do want to declare war. And we have expanded our footprint all over the world. I mean, the fact that, you know, four guys died in Niger because of poor security, doesn't that sound a lot like Benghazi? You know, but it's the same thing. You didn't even know we had troops in Niger. You know? And the Constitution does say that it's supposed to go before the Congress first. Mm-hmm. We're still operating under all those freedoms we took away under Bush. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
We signed away the Freedom Act and all that other jazz. These guys are still operating with all of these things. You have no personal freedoms in the U.S. right now. Anyway, the same picture running with Mercury tells us that it's about edicts and energetic creative thinking, jumpy thinking. Well, it has to do with a lot of people running around with standard ground weapons, so to speak. Not a good thing. So the U.S. ascendant, let's go back to that U.S. ascendant, right? We're going to be deal makers, all right? We're going to lie through our teeth, and we're not going to gain anything, seriously. We're going to get played for by chumps, except when it comes to dealing military weapons. We're going to be very sharp about arming everybody to the teeth. Now, you'll note that Mercury in Hades stands with this, and Apollon in the node. So the U.S. particularly is going to engage all of its partners worldwide and lie to them and call them shitheads and everything else. Mercury Hades is ugly talk. Mercury Hades is gutter talk, locker room talk, as our president would put it. Right? See, Mercury in Hades, vulgar thoughts to hang on to base eccentric ideas, raw power of thought, dramatic way of expression, ugly thinking, to make mistakes, oversight, to be silent with shame, to be sad, to be taciturn, malicious, vicious, stupid, and hidden thoughts. Now, I wonder how that works out in number 45's chart. Let's take a 90-degree dial here, throw some TNPs, and that gave me some thinking, you know. And let's take our nice Venus. No, she has a Venus and Hades conjunction. You know what that means?
Melania.
No, that means he likes his golden showers, okay? Venus in Hades, prostitution, paramours, procurers, servitude, general service, low purchasable love, to grieve, adversities in love, the hidden love affair, maidservant, waitresses, domestic servants, servitude, repulsiveness in love, love worries, dirty-minded.
He also wants to make money, doesn't care about
me. Oh, elsewhere.
I wonder why he bought a beauty contest.
Yes, we wonder why he bought a beauty contest. Yeah. But let's look, we're looking at Mercury and Hades. But if you look at his, you see, I get distracted. Because if you look at his Mercury and Neptune, and he has Mercury and Neptune, which are due by solar arc right now, and due with Poseidon. So Mercury plus Neptune minus Poseidon is the eyes of the church. To perceive ideas intuitively, high-minded intuition, to see through the make-believe of facts. Right, and that stands with his moon and Saturn, so it endears him with the public.
Is impeachment in this chart anywhere?
This is a failure chart. It's a very strong failure chart. But let's look at Mercury in Hades. He has Mercury in Hades running with Mercury in Venus. So you can imagine what one of his love letters would be like. And it stands with Jupiter. It stands with Jupiter. So he's lucky. He gets away with calling everybody an asshole. See, to enrich oneself by receiving stolen goods, offense. To feel at home in mixed society, loaded down with old matters, influenced by second-hand or old things. To be cheated in money matters. To love and think of the past. To live in the past. Good fortune gone. Now, I've often said that for anything we've ever found out about Trump finances, like take the building in Panama, right? They build a hotel in Panama. They make a few million dollars on it. They don't own the building. Their name is on the building. And they put it in their portfolio saying this is one of the Trump properties and it's not their property at all, right? And from everything I've understood about 45, which was when his finances were public up to 2006, right, this guy didn't have a pot to pee in. This is a guy who went bankrupt and made money by suing the people that owed him money, so to speak, right? This is a guy who is factored to the teeth. Now, you don't go to Russia for money in this world. Russia is a gas station, right? You go to Saudi Arabia for money, right? They know how to turn the money into gas into money. Russia doesn't know how to turn gas into money, right? If you really want money, you go to the Swiss. But the Swiss are going to own you, you see? The Russians are a little cruder about it. They're more like the mafia. In general. And that's the way Putin is running the country. So, if you go to Russia for money, it must be pretty bad. It's got to be pretty bad. So, my sense, basically, is this guy's been factored for a very, very long time. Now, the one record that I did see, that they did publish in the New York Times, right, did show that the bulk of his money came from The Apprentice. That he had made $250 million starring in The Apprentice. That was the only real money in the entire portfolio. Everything else was licensing, and he wasn't getting paid for his licenses. So here's a guy who sues people and goes out of business, gives licenses, and has to sue the people to get the money for his licenses because they won't pay him. Right? That kind of stuff. All over the place. It's like one giant Ponzi scheme. So you look at something like this, and you look at a chart like this, and what can you do, you know? This is a person who's had a very, very lucky life in many respects. But it wasn't a good life at this point in time.
Not satisfying.
No. No, I wouldn't say satisfying in the least. He doesn't know love. He doesn't know intellect. So, I mean, what else is there? You can't relate to people very well, and your thinking is messed up to begin with.
And he doesn't enjoy the world. He lives in a gilded tower.
No, but we can go on for that. The thing is, he's the face of something else, and only an idiot would take that position. You know, it's kind of like the so we can't go after him. You have to go after the things that are behind all of that. Let's take a break, all right?
So is that true for all presidents? They're all the face of...
No, no, no. This guy came in for a very specific reason. This part two, and this in front of you is what's called a graphic ephemeris. And basically what it is it's the zodiac repeated 8 times. This goes from 0 to 45 and then goes back. This is now the 46, 45th degree, 46, 47, etc. Up to 90, and then it goes back, and it goes up to 167, and then it comes back, and it goes back to 180, etc. So it keeps on revolving around this 45 degree thing. So that whenever any two lines cross, right, if there's any two lines that are crossing, they're crossing by either conjunction, where they're together in the sky, or opposition, where they're opposing, or square, or 45 degree. So they're in an angle of some sort, right? And you can see here, this would be the motion of, say, Uranus, right? Starts off at about 21 degrees of Aries, right? And then it drops down, comes forward, and then drops down. And you see here's where it goes into, give me 2 years. Where am I going to do this? But here we see it goes into Taurus, right, by that dot, drops down the first couple of degrees of Taurus, comes back out of Taurus, going retrograde. So here it's going direct, here it's going retrograde, turns, here it goes direct, changes the sign, turns, and goes retrograde, changes the sign again, pops out. That's the way all these lines are. So, for example, the faster moving here is Jupiter. See, Jupiter comes up, he stations, comes forward, crosses around, comes up to the bottom of the graph, and then finally leaves. All right? This gives us an idea of the major combinations coming in during the course of the year, just with the regular planets. Right, and I mentioned to you that Uranus and Neptune were making half squares, right? And notice that between July, beginning of July, and September, that Uranus and Neptune were making a giant half square during that time in the lead up to the in the middle part of this year during the summertime when all kinds of there were so many events going on. It's just like every week something else is one more crazy thing after the next, you know? Well, Jupiter finally hits the thing in late September, right, and leaves. Now, the fact that the Jupiter leaves means that this is now running on its own. And it's its own little world. And this is the crazy world. Uranus and Neptune not only rules loss of consciousness, but you know, this is wacko as in the mental institution kind of crazy. Uranus and Neptune means the transition into the beyond. Right? The future is suddenly now, which is explains the presence of people who are very disturbed. And it's a very upsetting combination. So this continues through 2018. You see, right up through the end of 2018, that still occurs. And at the end of 2018, the transiting node comes into the picture. See it? We get this giant picture here, and that's towards October, November of 2018. So we get the idea that intimacies, people's methods of connections start getting a little whacked at that point in time. Right? You'll note that connections, intimate connections in general, did very well last spring, during the springtime of this year. That is very good for relationships. And now as we get into December, November, December, we're running about here, you'll see the node will cross the Saturn and Jupiter. This is when the Senate intends to vote on the various fiscal packages. So we get the idea that the world is putting its budget together on a more intimate level. Then we come down, and the node runs over Chiron really quick, but then it's really not doing a lot until it gets to this combination towards the end of 2018. So intimate relations begin to dissolve at this point. Families begin to have problems at this point. So up until October of next year, they're doing okay. But after October of next year, the node retrogrades backwards into Cancer and starts to square to Uranus, and things start getting a little jumpy, and then it makes a half square to Neptune, and things start dissolving. But that's where that ends next year. Other thing to note, right, we see the big passage of Jupiter here, right? We've noted that Jupiter was the last feel-good combination occurred just around the end of September. That Jupiter now runs into Saturn on the cardinals where we are looking at right now. So, again, the idea that they're going to be looking at this large tax package isn't just the U.S., it is worldwide, that all these fiscal issues, Brexit and everything else, are going to be coming to the fore. Lots of other trade negotiations. Jupiter and Saturn rules business in general. Right? So we see a lot of energy about that. Now, consciously, I can't see the tax bill passing in its present form at all. People like Collins in Michigan and all that jazz will kill it because it's so bad. Again, it's attacking the Obama thing. If the Senate bill passes in its current projected form. But if they get the Obama thing out of it, all the Republicans are going to line up and vote for it and it will become law, and it will be a very, very damaging thing for the economy down the road, as we know. It will create largesse for organizations and poverty for individuals. That's that split where the Jupiter is at the 15th of Scorpio and the Saturn is in everybody's consciousness. Right? So as we push the Jupiter a little further, it makes another pass with Saturn as we get into February and March. That February and March. So is this showing a Neptune? Uranus there. There's the Uranus. Uranus is going to be that late, huh? Well, all right. Anyway, so that goes on. Doesn't do crap over here. Comes down, hits the Saturn for its last time until the conjunction. The conjunction is in another 2 years. With the Saturn in the latter part of August. So this whole section here has to do with finances, budgets, etc. Right? The Jupiter hits the Pluto in the end of November of 2018. Now, this is a positive change. Somebody was asking if there's anything good happening this year. This is it. Look, you got a little blip over here. That's not too bad. Actually, it's very good. This Jupiter, when it hit the Uranus and Neptune bit, right, in late September, what I said to folks was that the Jupiter Uranus is going to make a lot of bankruptcies. And we're going to see these bankruptcies come to a crescendo by the time we get to the end of 2018. Companies often go into bankruptcy when they're expanding the greatest. It's usually success that kills a company, not lack of materials. A success might force a company to take on more debt, to make debts. A success might mean that they can't make their deliveries, that sort of stuff. Now,
this next Black Friday.
And that's Black Friday. Now, this one that occurred in late September, right, locally corresponded with the announcement that Benny's is going out of business. You know, and there's a situation. The company wasn't doing bad. Basically, the kids didn't want to carry it forward, so they decided to cash it all in. And actually, it was a very smart move on that company's part because they had mostly real estate holdings. The one in Dennisport alone was worth $2.5 million. So there's a 31-chain store that might be right for somebody like Amazon to take over and get back into bricks and mortar and have a distribution center going. But there's a few other bankruptcies that have also occurred in this era that will be affecting things. And this is going to occur. Lots of the bankruptcies are getting dissolved through mergers. So, for example, Sprint and T-Mobile just called off talks in the last week. It's SoftBank owns Sprint. And essentially, you know, it's bleeding money. Both companies are essentially bleeding money. T-Mobile is bleeding money because they keep putting everything into advertising and not, you know, not enough into the hardcore of their business and paying their debts. And Sprint is bleeding money and has a big papa in SoftBank that owns them. But the idea here is both companies aren't healthy and they need to merge, but they're not going to merge. So this is going on all over the place right now. Companies tied together. I think what was it also occurred that finished up in that period was the merger of DuPont and Dow. Largest chemical merger. That's long past. Largest thing. That, and plus, what is it? Bayer bought Monsanto.
Oh, that's the one I was thinking of.
That hasn't finalized yet.
So what's the good news?
Yeah, what's the good news up there?
That's not good news.
No.
One little piece of good news occurs in November on Black Friday. And basically it's a Jupiter-Pluto. Jupiter-Pluto is a positive combination. Jupiter-Pluto occurred in February of this last year, shortly after first of the year and stuff like that, when all the good economic news was coming in. You know, Jupiter-Pluto was one of the things that ensured that the markets were going to continue to rise. So, you know, with Jupiter-Pluto, those good things are occurring. Now, as far as the markets are concerned in general, to address a few things on that, you know, there are people that are looking at the historicals on the S&P, and the S&P should be in a toilet right now, but it isn't. And it's basically because of the fact that the U.S. dollar has been dropping overseas. The markets are tied to the dollar right now. They're not tied to fundamentals. They're tied to a promise of the future. So I don't see a market crash per se in the immediate future at all. So it means that the tax bill probably will stands a chance in hell. You know, it stands a chance of passing.
I thought last year when we had our solstice talk, you had said things would be very rosy and the markets would go up and up and up,
correct,
and then you thought they'd really start to tank.
Yeah, they are going to tank once you, that was off by a year. It's going to be in 2019 under the Saturn and Pluto. One of the things, though, that goes on right now, though, is you've got to look at the bond market. The bond market's not too good because the U.S. government's going to start dumping all the treasuries it's been buying. In other words, it's going to change its direction in treasuries. And also look at interest rates. Interest rates are going to be going to go crazy. The era of free money is going to come to a close, or easy money, so to speak. And actually, it's been getting tighter and tighter. You know, while mortgage rates are like down to 3.5% or so for a 15 or 20 year mortgage, you can't get that mortgage unless you have 20% down. You know, and previously it was 5% down. So the bureaucracy has been inching up, tightening up loan criteria and stuff like that. So much fraud has gone on. You know, when that Neptune business went over to Uranus too, as well, was also when the Equifax thing broke. And the implications of that are yet to be seen. You know, I mean, this is a big deal. And people don't really get it that, you know, your vitals have all been stolen, you know, sitting around somewhere on some pirate bay server someplace. And that's not an easy thing. It's
so some practical questions there. I mean, would you be interested in locking down your credit and just freezing it up just to that's a good move.
Absolutely. If you go for a credit freeze, it's going to cost you $15 and another $15 to unfreeze it every time you decide to get a credit card or something like that. per organization, you have to do all three.
Yeah, $5 each.
$5,
$15.
I've done it. I know, $15.
Yeah,
it's 15 times three. 5 times three. But, yeah. But it means every time you unlock it, you've got a $15 charge and another $15 charge to lock it down again. So you've got to lock it, unlock it, unlock it, unlock it. And all that does is prevent somebody from creating fraud in your name. And the way the credit cards are put together and stuff, you're really not liable for more than a couple of grand, honestly. But what's worse isn't the credit business, is that somebody can create a fictitious persona and surreptitiously, say, steer your house away. They can start slowly filing things in the registry, like false addresses for papers to come to. Oh, I'm changing my address to receive my papers. And all of a sudden you're not getting information from the tax about your house, and they're paying the taxes on your property until it all works out until the last signature comes over, and then that's it. And one day you look and you don't have this property anymore. You go to the registry of deeds. It's not there anymore. And somebody in your name took and sold some other RFT off LLC offshore, and it's gone into the meat market mill, and nobody can figure out where that deed went. And so he's paying taxes all the time. That kind of stuff can occur. And that's the scary part with this. And there really isn't very much of a defense about that, except that now you have to be conscious of everything that's going on in your accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be very conscious of any obscure change, charge, that sort of stuff. So doing a credit freeze is a very prudent thing to do. Saves you the possibility of a loss of a few grand and a pain in the ass with a lot of bureaucratic letters. And it does signal somebody who's casually investigating your account that you're conscious enough to get a credit freeze. So they may not be able to do something slippery. The first indications of identity theft on a larger basis is if you look on your credit card or your bank charge or anything like that, and there's an unusual $1 charge or a 10-cent charge. So they test the accounts first to see if they're viable, the little charge. Then they'll make a purchase of under $100. They'll make a purchase of under $200. Then they'll drop a $10,000 purchase on it. Because they want to see how aware you are of that account. Because there's a period of time, if somebody makes a $10,000 purchase on your account and you don't challenge that purchase in the first billing cycle, it's your purchase. But if you challenge it in that billing cycle, you get the fraud departments on it and the credit card companies will absolve you. But that's what they're looking for. So they're waiting for you to ignore something long enough that then they can pass something through pretty quick. You know, and they buy that large item and then they immediately leave with it. So, yes, these are things you should be aware of in your credit situation and stuff, given what's going on. But it means in general, what this new time, one of the new things about the new time is you have to just be aware. You can't be complacent about anything in your life any longer. You can't trust things to run along an established line. And that's the Saturn, that's the Neptune and Uranus in the sky, the jumpiness of that. That Saturn being on the cardinals, Saturn is a very aware planet. You know, Saturn does its stuff by somebody not knowing the law or not knowing the bureaucracy. You know, what's the first rule of law? Is that you are responsible for the law whether or not you know it. You know, and Saturn banks on this. Saturn, you know, the whole trick with Saturn is the old Woody Allen law, and that's 98% of life is just showing up. Saturn just requires you show up. Period. You know, yes, you have to put the eye shades on and do very tedious things for Saturn and stuff like that. But if you know how to do all those tedious things, it's not that much hard work. You take the requirements of Saturn, and Saturn gives you a pass. He doesn't give you much more than a pass, but he gives you a pass. And this is the whole thing with Saturn. So he's not really that bad a taskmaster. But he's really bad. He's like the Saturn is like China to the basketball players that stole something. Right? In the U.S., they shoplift at a Tiffany's type of store. They get taken out. Their parents have to pay a fine to get slapped on the wrist. In China, you're going to go to jail for 10 years. You know, we don't care. You know, that's Saturn. Saturn is really about protocol. It's about doing things in a formalized way and following the structure. Then you follow the structure, you do things in a form like where you can be the biggest crook in the planet and still get away with it. You know? So, and it's the poor slob who's forgetful, who can't tie their shoelaces, who can't put something together, that Saturn hammers. Saturn really comes down on. And it's terrible. But then again, who said the planets are fair? They're not. So, in this particular time here, right, let's throw some. I'm going to do another one with the TNPs. We'll do the same thing here. Let's make it 1 year. And let's get
going. So, what was the good news in November
2000? We have one good period. Well, let's put it this way. If you want to look at it, that's a little too much.
That's
not
good news.
No, I've got that short map. That's a picture.
Waiting
for good news. That's a picture of what's art. Let's do this. Let's go for 4 months at a time here.
If you identify November as a good period, does that mean we're going to like the midterm election outcomes?
Hey, look at this. This thing is not math. Who knows? Clicking on that go forward button. It doesn't do shit. Mm-hmm. You're right, though. What was that last question?
November 8th, 2018. Good news.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was late in the year. It's not a great year. Look, I warned everybody last year. Did I not warn you guys last year that this was the one that last year would be, you know, kind of lied out through, would be crazy and all that other stuff.
That's why there's not a lot of people here.
Now I said, be careful, this is going to be a year, it's not going to be a great news year, that it's pretty good. And this is a build up for next year. This year is a setup for next year. It's 2019. Look, let me just jump out of this for a minute.
Well, what about 2020? 2019 is build up for 2020.
And 2019 is a build up for 2020. Yeah, let's do something here. Let's grab any one of these charts.
You know, it feels like we're on a precipice. And I guess it's...
No, we're not on a precipice. But it feels
that way. Like it's a pressure cooker. And there's so much that's being exposed. And it just seems like none of it is sustainable. But to hear it's going to be stasis for another, like, 2 or 3 years before it breaks, Gary.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to look at something like that. You know, Saturn and the Sun standing here with Neptune and Pluto, and Abydos and Volcanus, and then there's Jupiter. And Jupiter's not running with the Sun. It's running incidental to this. The big, you know, we go on a 360 degree dial. There's the big picture. Saturn, Sun, Cardinals. What else is there? You know, it's the large signature. And you know, like I say, Saturn, every time I think of Saturn, I think of John Rockefeller giving a little poor kid a shiny bright dime. That's how I kind of see that whole thing. Now look, I'm going to put up a picture here. I'm going to show you this picture.
Did he do that?
Yes, he did. Now, Uranus and Apollon rule astrology. Okay? I showed this before 2 years ago. Right? I'm going to advance this thing monthly. Alright? And what I want you to look at, Uranus and Apollon rule astrology, but here's what else it rules. The general world waits for a decision with great tension. The general world in expectation of things to come. Expansion by leaps and bounds, sudden experiences, revolutionary knowledge, new science, astrology. Many are under tension, mathematics and to measure. So the idea here is that Uranus and Apollon are the expansion or the implications of technology. The good things from technology, including astrology. Because it's the science, Apollon, of astrology, Uranus. It's the science of the revolutionary, or electronics. So the idea of Uranus and Apollon has to do with the implication, the nowness of all of the technology, all new ideas, measuring things, have knowledge, etc. It's been running with Neptune since the late 80s. So in the 90s, it ran, started running very exact, and has been running with it since then. And even to the fact that they're going to have at UAC a panel as to whether astrologers should predict. Now, let me tell you something. This is how insane real truth and truthiness is and stuff. Right? Yeah, truthiness.
Yeah.
If I look at a chart, and I see somebody with a Sun-Saturn conjunction in their natal horoscope, right? And I say, oh, you know, was your father present when you were born? Did you have problems with authority growing up? Did you have to be correct? Right? I am making a prediction about their life. You can't look at anything in a chart and say that this is part of their character without saying it's part of their destiny.
Yeah.
How can you take prediction out of astrology without gutting it and just turning it into some sort of idea of 20th century therapy? So, Neptune at the midpoint of Uranus and Apollon, and Uranus and Apollon rules astrology. But it also tells us that the implications of the technology become manifest in the future. That astrology is something that is corrupted now, but will later become something very important. This is a combination of truth without the Neptune. So let's look at this thing through time. I want you to watch, I'm going to lock the midpoint, and I want you to watch the Neptune going back and forth across this axis as we move forward in time. See the Neptune crosses, right? And that's in March. The Neptune crosses again, goes retro. I'm going to move faster. Crosses again. You notice that it's moving with this midpoint? See it? Our astrology can't escape Neptune right now.
Yeah.
See it? Until we get to
Yep.
2024.
Oh.
And at 2024, right now we're looking at Saturn conjunct the Sun on the cardinal axis with Jupiter at the 15 degree of Scorpio. This is Neptune conjunct the cardinal axis with Poseidon at 15 degrees of Scorpio.
Oh.
Right? And this is in 2024. And you'll notice that the Uranus and Apollon stand on the cardinal axis. And from this point forward, the Neptune no longer crosses this axis for at least the next 1,000 years. Right? Because look, watch what happens when we go forward from this date and period. I'm going to go very quickly now. The Neptune doesn't catch up. See it? Doesn't catch up. Doesn't cross the line. It gets less and less and less with each passing year. Yeah. So we will have come through a long term from 1987 to 2024 where Neptune's been going back and forth over the implication of all the technology, all the mathematics, all the astrology and everything else that has to do with technical truth that we know of. So we're in the dark about the implications of all the technology. If I minus Neptune from that axis, right, our interpretation now becomes attention releases. Tension and relaxation change quickly. Fast changing hope and despair. The tension of uncertainty. But as I see it, it blanks the implications of technology until the future. So all this data, your personal IDs, your fingerprint, your footprint on the web, your everything you do collectively, your Nest thermometer tracking when you come and go in your house, your automobile becoming something you only rent in the future as opposed to own, all these changes that are going on, right, the implication of it as a whole thing is going to be as incredible for us to wake up and realize as it was to say somebody going from 1890 to 1920, except in a much shorter time. Like in 1890, no cars, horses shit in the streets, no pensions, no nothing, right? No machine guns, nothing like that. 1920, cars everywhere, radio, electricity, lights, vacuum cleaners. Vacuum cleaners are a really important invention. One of the most important. That ranks right up there with refrigerators. All of these things happened in within a 30-year period, even a 20-year period. But in our case, it's going to happen within a 2-year period. We're going to wake up one day and we're all going to be antediluvian and the kids will have grown a sixth finger. You know? Yeah. Kind of thing. It's like, yeah. You know, I'm going to say, hey, where did you get that sixth finger? And he's going to say, oh, it's been growing all along.
Yeah.
You just didn't notice. And that's the way everything is going to be. So the implication of the social media, the reining in of the social media, how the companies are dealing with this phalanx of information and things like that, we don't have a clue. And we're not going to have a clue for a while. And astrology is still the savior of all of this stuff, believe it or not. Here we are in our funny little world, but this is all tied up with astrology. The same axis rules astrology. You've got to realize astrology, for the last 2,000 years, has been one of the main technological drivers in the world for both information and everything else. It's because of astrology we have mathematics. No, period. There's no reason to have that. One of the big discoveries was, what is it, tablet number 381 in the Babylonian material, the library in Nineveh, where it shows a trigonometric projection of the orbit of Jupiter, which is basically calculus. And this particular method doesn't even happen until the 15th century in terms of Western mathematics. And again, in the Western mathematics, developed the model for positioning and for calculating planets' positions. Everything was about calculating planets' positions, Douglas, until the 1800s. In the 1800s is when we went from calculating planets' positions for astrology purposes to doing it for war purposes. Because that's when the Brits put out their big prize for somebody to create a clock that could be taken out to a ship at sea that wasn't pendulum-based, right? So they could figure out where their warships were at any given time for perfect navigation. And, of course, the escarpment clock won the prize. You know, the tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock clock. Because they were able to go out to sea, they could time when the planets were rising and setting, get their navigation done, and use it for war. All right. Computers were put together to calculate orbital elements of shell trajectories, right? Because it was so hard for the Navy in the warships, the modern warships, when they shoot a 2-ton projectile 27 miles, right, to do these calculations on the fly. This is what Alfred Vickers did in World War I, was calculate artillery tables all day long. Right? So the first Mark I and ENIAC computers that were made for the military versions, were for calculating naval trajectories on shells, on artillery, which then became useful when we were doing orbital elements for rockets, which is why computers and astrology fit so well together. So all the technological drivers were always astrology throughout most of history. You know, it's the mandate of heaven. If you can get the mandate of heaven down, get your calendars down right, you're going to keep that year, period. And most of the emperors and most of the people in power were in power because of the mandate of heaven, because of the work of their astrologers. Nothing else. And, of course, the Western world, because of Gutenberg's press and because of the Reformation, right, we get to use astrology as a scapegoat for emergence of science, essentially. You know, remember, astrology is one of the only fields of study that gives science an original sin. Because astrology was thrown out of science a priori, without any testing, and was used as an excuse to the church to not bother its existence. Essentially, you know, the astrologers were had a lot more credibility than the priests in the 16th century. Now remember, your religious beliefs for 1,500 years prior to that were rock solid Catholicism by the old book. You didn't even know where those rules came from because you couldn't even read the Bible. And then, of course, Gutenberg publishes the Bible. Martin Luther reads the damn thing, gets freaked out at the indulgences and the fact that just like capitalism isn't mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, the Pope isn't mentioned in the Bible. You know, so what the hell are we doing under this Pope? We can have our own church. The Bible says we can have our own church. That starts the Reformation. That fight kills the credibility of the church. The astrologers are coming along using that same printing press that made the Bible, and they make their almanacs, and the almanacs, they work pretty good. By the time 1665 comes along, William Lilly is predicting that London is going to burn to the ground, and London obliged in 1666. Cover of his almanac, London burning. In 1665, and 1666 it burned down. The church was freaked out at this. The church was really... You know, they're going to listen to me, they're going to listen to some astrologer running with pagan knowledge at a time when we have this new Anglican church that's run by the state. It's treasonous not to believe in the church. It's treasonous to believe in that papal shit. Right? So what do? The Royal Society, who was also would have been equally condemned in any other religious situation, why are the Muslims having a fight now? Because they have no Industrial Revolution. They had no Industrial Revolution because they didn't have a Reformation. We had a Reformation. It allowed science to emerge, another belief system that competes directly with the church, because science is nothing more or less than a religion of its own. It's a belief system that covers everything. Church is in a belief system that's attempting to cover everything. The only thing science doesn't do is cover the quote-unquote afterlife by saying it doesn't exist. Very simple. Right? So... science allows us, or almost forces us, to have an Industrial Revolution. And of course, the premise of the Industrial Revolution was to not relieve your labors, but to relieve the labors of animals. We won't be torturing those horses, those oxen, or anybody else anymore to drive the equipment and the machinery. Right? And the humans will always, even though they were Luddites, they didn't want their hand-run looms to become automated. Right? You know, there are always people that are upset because they're going to get thrown out of a job. It's just adjustments. You'll always be working. This leads to the rise of the Capitalistic Manifesto. This leads to the rise of the Marxist Manifesto. There's only 50 years difference between the two of them, and they're both 200 years old. They're both 200 years old. We're running a modern economic world where 200 years ago, if you got a cut, you were going to die because you got an infection. Right? And now we're doing surgical techniques where they just transplanted a brain, a head, you know, made all the connections right and that sort of shit. And I didn't live, but they made the connections right. And we're running our entire lives and financial stuff on systems that were built at a time when the buggies were being greased with goose fat. Alright? I mean, they didn't have oil coming out of the ground or anything like it. So there's something wrong with that structure. Things need to evolve in that sense. So it's the same thing here with this Uranus and this Apollon bit, that the implication of technology is yet to be seen. Now we look at it, and as I said, we might as well have been born in 1875 and be dumped into 1925 and look around and see all neon lights on the streets and cars running around and, oh my God, how freaky is that? Well, we're going to be dumped into a new world the same way. We're going to be old people saying, hey, what did you say? What's that thing? What's that thing flying around over there looking at me? Why is this little thing following me everywhere? That kind of stuff. It's going to be just, I can't even, I've spent my entire life envisioning the future, and I can't even figure out how this is all going to come out. But
and this is 2024.
That's 2024. So there's a couple of levels of release that go on here. One is we're still going down the slide. All right, we got one more year going down the slide before we're at the rocky bottom. 2019 is the rocky bottom. Saturn goes back and forth with that Pluto. It's going back and forth, having a dance with that Pluto. What does it do after it gets done with Pluto? It goes after Uranus. It goes run right after Uranus. It's the next thing that's going to hit. So that becomes a problem. Here, if we go back in time, I'll show you that.
I think a lot of this could have to do with climate science.
A lot of it's going to have to do with the way the climate goes.
Like, maybe yes. By 2024 yes. will be the last disaster, and everybody will say, we're not doing this anymore.
Could be. Now, watch. Now, remember we were looking at that midpoint of the Uranus and Apollon, right? And we were talking about the fact that it rules astrology and technology. Well, the thing about that is, they come into conjunction. And not that far away, either. See? That's in 2018. We start getting the Uranus-Apollon conjunctions. Well, actually, it's not the opposition. I'm sorry. But the point is, something big is going on with astrology. And that's when it starts to pop out. And that's a biggie. That's a biggie. I just might point out as well, it's on my Mercury.
Very good. Go, Gary, go.
When's UAC?
That's the month after UAC. Yeah. See, if we introduce solar fire into the combination, it's a good thing. But that is one of your better combinations, by the way. Because look, here's something else that's going on. Here is the Uranus and Apollon coming into their opposition. We're getting a perfect Neptune on the picture, right? So it's as unclear and as messy as ever could possibly be, but it stands with Pluto and Poseidon. And Pluto and Poseidon is a change in belief systems. The general transformation of religion or ideology, intellectual and spiritual transformation and changes, change of religion and ideology, the development of spiritual religious behavior and convictions, right? So here we have this thing going on, right? Change in ideology, right in the middle of massive technological implications, and it's all about people's spirituality. So what are we going to have to figure? We're going to have to try and get, what is it, the ghost in the shell? We're going to have to try and figure out what is sentience? What is consciousness?
Right.
And I think these are going to be some of the questions that are going to be asked, because probably the first AI machines will be coming up in the next few months that are self-learning, and they're going to be, there was something that went on that happened last year.
Robot, I thought you were saying the robot that Boston Robotics just flipped backwards.
Yeah, well, that's their ability to move. Even more so, about 9 months ago, Amazon announced that they had some results from this. They were trying to do a massive robotics in their warehouses, which they're still doing, right? And they invented these robots that basically look like a long column. They just go and move stuff all over the place. So, like, you're working in a thing, you just drop it on this robot, and it's going to go take it across the warehouse someplace else. Well, the problem was collision avoidance. How do the robots not run into each other and know where to go? So they started using, what is it? What's the thing we've been looking at, the AI process? There's a self-learning process that's using graphic chips.
Neural network?
Neural networks. They drop a neural network on these guys, right? And which is a self-learning machine algorithm. In other words, it's a technique so that the machines pick up cues and then address their own programming, right? Well, really fast, the machines invented their own language. That was the first thing they did. The robots invented their own language, and the computer scientists can't figure it out. They can't figure it out. And their efficiency went up through the roof. So they're really efficient. It's operating like crazy now. That happened just about 6 months ago. So what it means is that when these AI things hit a threshold, it's like all of a sudden they cascade and it becomes something else. You know? And I expect to see an awareness happening among machines, not in the sense of Skynet or some kind of killer robot or something like that, but just in the sense of discover what is consciousness, what defines consciousness. So you start seeing these TV shows going on, right, where it's always like Terminator or some other robot. There's one coming out of Britain called Humans, which is talking about this very sense. You know, what is the sense of self? What is self? And this is a combination that shows this is a profound change through technology in terms of the conception of way the world runs, but nobody gets to see it. It's the Neptune part of it. You know, so that's in the spring, summertime. Yes?
Do
No, I was just thinking when you were talking about, you know, people kind of clearing up space in their CPU and everything going to the cloud and kind of like, you know,
that's what brain, we
brain,
think
right,
of it.
Brain
yeah.
partitioning, you know, and I was thinking parallel to that is the question that thought and consciousness don't reside in gray matter.
May not.
And people like Sheldon, what's his name? Rupert
Sheldrake.
Sheldrake.
Yes.
Like, you know, really pushing back against the dogma that thinks everything is dead and nothing has consciousness.
Correct. I've met Rupert several times.
Have you?
Yes. Very pleased to have done that. And yes, the idea of metamorphogenic fields where the presence of the past,
right.
the past is right here, just behind us all the time, but the idea as well that everything is conscious.
Right.
My sense, and we're just, you got to indulge me a second here to detract from the thing. My sense about it basically is that anything that's organized has consciousness. We just may not be able to communicate with that consciousness. So a rock or a crystal has consciousness because it's an extremely organized lattice. Right? It's just a very slow-moving consciousness. It doesn't have animated properties like we do. But the fact that it's self-organizing is the critical thing. So that allows things like planets to have a consciousness, orbits of planets around other bodies to be a consciousness acting out certain things. Life doesn't have to be something that has arms, legs, limbs, talks, and communicates. Mm-hmm. You know, life doesn't even have to be self-aware. It's something we imposed on it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So my side note is basically yes. Anything that organizes, that self-organizes, is the definition of consciousness. And
so that is like a really potentially positive evolution.
Absolutely.
If we revert back to believing that nothing is dead now.
Absolutely. This is one of the big things that astrology has to offer to the world that science doesn't. Astrology does presuppose that the universe is alive. We are what's called a type 1 religion. Astrology really isn't a religion because it's not something you believe in. It's a tool you use, but it implies things. And so we're right back there with the animist religions, where the everything is alive. The gods are in the sky, and there's the god of the wind, and there's the god of the sun, etc., etc. And these things are, all these forces are interacting around us, and we have to exist within all these forces, mm-hmm. right? They're polytheist kind of religions. Right, we're ranking right back into that situation. Astrology is one of those things. We believe in the powers of these different planets, but it isn't as if these planets have powers. It's as if they have their own consciousness and they're walking around talking to one another. This is the way the Babylonians conceived of astrology. You know, one of the things about our astrology is our astrology comes from the Greeks, where it was this idea of this concept of horoscopos, or the hour on the horizon is the idea. This rising sun is the critical thing. The Greeks had no clocks. How the hell did they time a horoscope? They had no clocks. The best they had was a stick in the ground. And if there were a few Ankara machines floating around somewhere, the general publisher didn't have them. There weren't big monuments out in the square showing the time. No, they had a stick in the ground, an obelisk. That was it. You are not accurate in time with an obelisk. But yet they presuppose an astrology that requires good timekeeping. Mm-hmm. So we got to go back to the Babylonians. They had no clocks in the Babylonians, nor did they give a shit. Right? They weren't doing horoscopos. They find in the library in Ninibia, they find these things, two kinds of tablets, thousands of them. But one is rare, and one is gazillions of this type. It's called System A and System B. And System A is your standard ephemeris. In other words, listing of planetary positions on a regular basis. So the tablet of Venus, the tablet of Jupiter, etc. As a matter of fact, these are the tablets that allowed astrology to be practiced up to the 5th century, because the Greeks did not make a single ephemera. They didn't know how to make an ephemera. Right? They didn't observe the planetary motions. They used the Babylonian tables. Right? The other system is called System B. And there's thousands of these systems B, and they can't figure out what they are. They have generally an ephemeris of 2 months' length, predominantly about the moon. One side is showing positions, what the moon is hitting in that 2 months. The other side is an inscription explaining it. Right? So it's this 2 month period. And they keep calling it, they keep saying there's these odd ephemerides. They can't figure out what these ephemerides are for. Both Brady, right, Bernadette Brady and myself have the same belief about these things. These are horoscopes. And this is the way the Babylonians read them. They didn't have clocks. They read the journey of the moon going through the planets and talking to the gods. So it would say, like, oh, in this time, Venus came and hit Mars and brought its rays from Mars to Jupiter. And then the moon came and hit the Mars and then hit the Venus rays of Jupiter and took them to the sun. And that was the story of your life. That was how they did the narrative. They did the narrative of how the planets were interacting before, during, and after your birth. And in this way, they developed the story. And this is their reading. And in a sense, this is like something, this kind of a narrative, this is astrological view, right, predates the Greeks, predates the concept of time. Right? Make the astrology right there touchable. So, coming into a bigger world, and the Babylonians, so the whole universe is alive, just like all the type 1 religions. So astrology holds this special place for all of us, because in the end, the astrological thesis, because we were condemned without recourse, without testing, right? And all the tests that have ever been done on astrology ever since have always tested the astrologer, who's poorly trained, and not the astrology. When we do a test on astrology, we get results like the Gauguins, right? We do a test on astrologers, doesn't work out. We do tests with old technique requiring resonance of, like, rulerships and things. It doesn't work. Mark McDonough went crazy doing this, right? Literally. But you have to test planetary interaction. It's planetary interaction which is the key to all the models. So this business here, this realization that there's a technological life form or a technological consciousness or a change in religion because something occurs in the technology. Or, remember, at the same time that this is occurring over here, Saturn is running into its opposition, has just finished the opposition with Hades, which rules the alien. All of these combinations make sense if all of a sudden we realize we're in contact with another civilization that isn't Earth based. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Because all of a sudden, it's the implication of the technology, the worldviews have to change, the issues of consciousness come in, the concept of dealing with aliens, and then there's this really weird sense of was once part of the consciousness is basically going extremely fundamental and back to origins, and the other part of it is expanding like crazy. The Jupiter-Saturn economy is there in the beginning. So this becomes a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting concept, but it lets us know how religion, truth, ideals, that where we are, that we're in the blind right now as far as the technology is concerned for a while. We also know that Saturn going over the course of that Hades and Kronos during the course of this year is going to let us have a look-see into the realities and structures of governments and where the governments are going to let the people down and where they're going to have problems when the Hades Kronos comes together in 27. The poor government, the government that has no resources, that's not going to be helpful, it's completely corrupt. We're seeing examples of these things. Growing up in the 50s and growing up in the 60s, you didn't see these things happen. You know, there'd be a revolt in the Congo, or the people would starve in Bangladesh because of a failure of the crops and stuff. But the transition from colonized states to independent states went well. I couldn't believe in my lifetime that we started falling behind in all this stuff. That poverty and hunger rose in the world in my lifetime. You know? There was a period when I was in my late teens, my mother would come to me and she'd say, Gary, I'm really sorry, but I tried. I really tried to make the world good, you know, but we failed miserably, and unfortunately, I've got to give you the keys now. And I'm not part of it anymore. It's your world. You have to deal with it. And I feel so bad saying the same thing to my kids now. Because it's really true. You know? You know, we were the me generation. We were the Uranus, the Pluto, Leo kids. You know, the baby boomers and stuff. You think we would have learned something and done something right? Mm-hmm. Our generation did more damage than all the other generations combined. Mm-hmm. And for no damn good reason. You know, you invent ideals that really have universal appeal and are driving the world now. You know, the whole European experience is because of the Marshall Plan. The reason that the Europeans have the kinds of government they have and not the U.S. style government is because the Marshall Plan dictated that. They got rid of the flaws in the U.S. representational model. You know, the U.S. government is not a government democracy in the direct sense. We are an indirect democracy. We are representational for a very strong reason. The founding fathers did not want the rule of the mob. Period. And the first thing they passed was sedition acts, which meant you can't say anything bad about the government. You know, this whole business of the Second Amendment and all that jazz, the first line says, regarding a well-regulated militia. They didn't want people to have, they didn't say in the Second Amendment you could have guns because of a tyrannical government. It's just the opposite. They said basically, you could have guns to protect this government. Period. Not to take up arms against it. Right, a well-regulated militia, and it was considered moot. Remember, the NRA only comes up in 1873. It was considered moot by the Civil War because of the National Guard. The National Guard became that well-regulated militia run by the state. After 1873, the NRA, promoting good gun graces and stuff like that, must have had some weird-ass horoscope. Because they grew into some sort of multi-headed hydra. Mm-hmm. They aren't around anymore teaching people good gun habits. They just want people to have lots of guns. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up with a guy who was the man who gave out the permits for, you know, guns and rifles and stuff in northern New Jersey, in Hudson County, a guy named Schmitz. He was really responsible. You know, it's like, if you saw a nutcase, you wouldn't give him a license. He didn't like somebody, he didn't give him a license. And that was it. You got no guns. You're like a soup Nazi. You know? What happened? These were responsible people. They were doing responsible things. So I feel bad, because it was in my generation, it was on my watch, that characters like our president and everything else came to pass. Our parents were a little stronger about it, but even they were screwed up. Remember, all that business about the greatest generation having fought World War II, that was the worst generation. These were the guys that grew up in the worst depression of the world, got sacrificed in the worst war of the world, and then built the worst possible buildings and cars you could ever imagine, right? And they're getting a pat on the back for it. It was the generation prior to the last generation that went to World War I. Those were the guys that built the Brooklyn Bridge, that built all the Empire State Building and all the great monuments of the world. The greatest generation, the one just before us, they were shit. And it's unfortunate because we're worse than them. You know, so it's not, that doesn't look too good. All right, guys, we've got to do a little bit more before we run out of here. One of the things I was looking at, we had done the Capricorn Ingress, but I was about to bring up some of the maps, and I was looking at some of the graphs. We were going to look at more of the combinations of the year. We won't have time. Much better if we look at some of the map material so we can see where things are happening, so we aren't so U.S. Focused, so to speak. Let me get the right planets here, displayed points. The way this thing works, you have to do it every single time, but we don't want that. How do you do that? Just save? No. Well, that's right. You've got to not use the solar fire points. Get rid of that. No, we don't want that. We don't want Chiron, but we do want We need Zeus, really, more than anything else. Cupido, Hades, yada, 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 and supply that. There we go. It looks big, looks horrible. Let's go over to the U.S. first. Okay, in the U.S. on the this is called a solar map. This is where we project the chart directly onto the Earth for the solstice. And these various lines, there are two types of lines, these straight lines are meridian lines, the curved lines are lines where the planet is on the horizon. And here's the U.S., and the most important thing to note is this is the line for Neptune rising. We looked at that a little bit earlier. You'll see that it goes to the northeast, slightly inland, clips Florida, right, and then heads on out. Right. Note as well, here's Puerto Rico, give you an example of how this stuff works, and there is the Saturn and the Sun going right over Puerto Rico. And, of course, we know what's going on down there right now. And what. So now you get an idea of what Saturn and Sun is. It's too few resources trying to do too much. Right? Note that we have Cupido going over Cape Cod by P-Town here, just at the very end.
That's
right. That is very nice for us locals. It really is. And we have Venus going out the other side, coming down through Connecticut, through Western Mass, right up the Vermont, New Hampshire. Yeah, well, near Burlington. Burlington's going to be a nice place, right? So will even Providence and stuff. It actually hits the Hamptons. See the line goes through the Hamptons. So Venus has got a nice run here, and it does pretty good for the U.S. But if we get way over to the east, right, between that Sun-Saturn, here's the Sun-Saturn, right, and here is Hades. Actually, this is in front of it. Let me move this thing here. See, here's Hades down here. So the Hades line comes up, and here's the Sun-Saturn. And right in this area is the St. Lawrence Seaway, Bay of St. Lawrence Seaway.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we've had all the deaths of the right whales.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we've had almost half a dozen deaths right there. Since they're moving north, they usually hang out by us here, but they're moving north after the zooplankton in the spring. And they don't have the lobster regulations that we have, because they don't get the whales usually that far north. They all get tangled up in the lobster pots, and they've lost almost a dozen of them. So that's a real, and that shows here very, very clearly. It's not a really great thing. There should be some sort of incident offshore here, dealing with a military item. Kronos and Zeus are crossing over here, which would indicate some sort of problem with the military or a boat sinks or something like that. Notice that Mercury goes right down through the center of the country. So all the debates, all the thinking, all the communications, infrastructure work and everything else all has to do with the middle of the country. You notice right now we're yelling about Alabama,
mm-hmm.
right? A pedophile case in Alabama. Mercury rules children, right? So that's current news today.
And how far from the line is the influence?
Well, you notice here's Birmingham, and usually you can go up to 200 miles either direction. Right? Now, we come down here. This is, what is this? This is Admetos, which is birth, death, and all the rest, right? And you'll notice that it crosses Vulcanus and the moon right over the Nebraska areas. And right now we have a 100,000 gallon plus spill going on with the Keystone Pipeline, which is in a public debate, that kind of thing. Admetos is death, destruction, all that jazz. We already had the earthquake south of it and on the border. There will be more as well. And also note that there's going to be earthquake activity offshore here. You'll notice the Mars line goes right through Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and crosses Pluto just off of L.A., right off of San Bernardino. Now, remember, it had all the fires in the springtime, and that the conditions of that aren't breaking very easily. The Mars crosses the Kronos in Oregon, and it crosses Hades just north of Seattle. This area is not very good, right? And you'll note that Apollon is just offshore. And a little bit further offshore is Uranus. Here's the Uranus meridian line. So we have things like Hades crossing the Uranus. Oops, come back there. Hades crossing the Uranus, or Cronos crossing that Uranus, right? Or Saturn crossing the Uranus, etc. This is that giant plate. This is the only plate that hasn't, I mention it every year.
Yeah.
It's the only plate that hasn't moved in the Pacific. And it's the one that does the most damage when it does move. So, and it's offshore enough for it to actually be the plate itself. But if anything's going to happen, it's going to happen offshore in this area, under this meridian.
But affect, you know.
It's going to affect the east coast, the west coast, yes. Now, Jupiter is the boundary of all this. And you notice the Jupiter meridian line comes down through Boise, near Salt Lake City, and right over Las Vegas, et cetera, right? And right next to the Jupiter is that Poseidon and stuff. And, like, we've had all those killings and murders and whatnot going on in Las Vegas. I think that's the one that gets the most PR. Is going to be the one in Las Vegas that the guy killing the 50 people, because we've had a couple of that should really since that should really have gotten a lot more noise, but we keep coming back to that one, and that's because it doesn't fit in the narrative. You know what I mean? It's basically, you know, a white guy who watches Fox News who's 70 years old shooting up a lot of people. Who does that sound like? You know? Alright, now where the moon goes is also where places are popular. Denver does well, it's got Vulcanus and the moon. The only place, of course, Dakotas are terrible. And another thing to note as we come in a little closer, you see Hartford is looking good pretty much here. And but Richmond, Virginia, right, they just had a really stinky run themselves. The governorship run was pretty stinky in that thing. And you'll notice that Neptune line goes right past. There's Arlington. And there's our Washington area. So that's for the U.S. Let's get out of these maps here. Let's go back to the world. Things we need to know in the world are... But first of all, we need to go to. First of all, we need to go to India, right? And in India area, we've got Neptune crossing between Bangladesh and Burma, right? On that side, and on the bottom is we have Mercury running. So the Mercury Neptune combo occurs offshore, where that earthquake was a few years ago, the one that really, the tsunami right after Christmas. But also the idea here is that Mercury is going right through the center of Burma. Where's my... Come back here. I just lost my... Yeah, I know. It's Myanmar. I know. I don't have a mouse anymore. I can use this thing. All right. But notice here that the Neptune line at the border, well, this is where the Rohingya are right now, you know, and they're having a real problem. We'll also notice here's Admetos, and there's been some deaths reported in Sri Lanka, right? Recently, the Tamil people they had signed a peace treaty, and now the government's coming down just indiscriminately murdering them. But if you notice that Admetos, because Admetos means death, that goes right through Madras and Kanpur and then straight up at the western edge of Nepal and then into the disputed area between China and India. These guys have been having a border war up there that has not been publicized but is very intense. So that might explode, so to speak. That might explode. Now we get to Pakistan and Afghanistan, and look, we've got, cut that out. We've got Jupiter, right, and Poseidon. Now, Poseidon is going up across what's called Baluchistan, right? And I don't mean like out of Popeye cartoons, but Baluchistan is one of the most spiritual places on the planet. It really is, even though it's Muslim. But it used to be a place that tolerated non-Muslim strange sex all the time. They can't anymore. So there's a lot of secretive religious stuff going on over here. They have to be, or else they get their heads handed to them, literally.
What's the area called again?
Baluchistan. Right. It's a very big area where the bad guys are running around. But at the same time, it's going to be, you know, Herat and all these places are going to be a very high spiritual thing. And, you know, it's Jupiter is here going through Pakistan. Who would think, right? But lots of money is going in. And there's a pipeline that actually follows this Jupiter line that they're building to go out to the sea to bring the oil from the Caspian region.
And the opium.
Yeah. Well, the opium's coming out of... The opium issue with Afghanistan has to do with Tehran. The CIA, in their infinite wisdom, like they did in Laos and the Vietnam War, are basically allowing the opium to get grown by the warlords to sell into Iran. More than a third of the Iranian population is addicted to opium. Yeah. They all do it publicly in the parks and stuff like that. They keep hanging people. They can't hang enough people. You know how they hang people there. They just put a crane and they just haul you up on a crane and swing you around for a while. It's a bad place for that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And you'll notice that Mars goes right up on the other side of that border. And it's crossing Yemen, along with Vulcanus crossing Yemen. And Apollon, so you know, a lot of. Right? And we see that all this Mars business crossing that eastern edge. And the moon is all along the Red Sea. And there's a huge amount of disruption going on here. So let's get back
so
here.
Where would Riyadh be?
I was just about to go over there. Here is Saudi Arabia, right? Let's go into our, see if I get maps over Saudi Arabia. Go. It's so hard to do that. Here we go. Here we are. Riyadh's right in the middle here, actually, to tell you the truth. But it's got Vulcanus and Uranus. And Uranus is running right through the middle of Saudi Arabia, down through the Yemen areas, into Somalia. Right? And on the bottom here is Zeus, which is the military. So we get up into when we get up to Syria area, you see a lot of guns. But as we get through Saudi Arabia, we see this idea of Vulcanus and Uranus, which is a powerful revolution going on. So that young, the old man giving up power, I don't think the old man is giving up power as much as the young kid has a gun to his head. Because he's really, and unfortunately number 45 is supporting this coup, and it's not a very good thing, because the Saudis do have more money than God, and they are the 800-pound gorilla in that region, and where they breathe is worse than where... It's just a bad thing. So I don't have great hopes for what's going on in Yemen, and I don't have confidence in what's going on in Riyadh. Notice that Pluto in all of this is running through Egypt, Cairo, the eastern Sudan, and Ethiopia, etc. This is not very good either. Big power plays are going to happen in that area of the planet. Now, when we get to Europe, you'll see how that begins to run. You see, here's the moon line, right? And here's that Pluto line. See how it goes up through Greece and everything else? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff going on with Cyprus and whatnot as well, right? And that Vulcanus business here going up with Zeus in the western part, the eastern part of Syria, this is the Kurdistanic regions. Right? This is where... Kurdistan is real here, but this is where they're fighting. This is where the whole Kurd population is, basically. Lots going on in there. You're going to see those places in the news. Notice that Hades is... running up through the middle of the desert, right next to Tripoli, through Sardinia. And this is an amazing thing because the rise of the Sardinian mafia is coming back, and they're apparently making a lot of noise, and goes right through Marseille through Paris and up into the Channel. So, again, remember I mentioned, I'm not too clear about Macron being a good guy.
Uh-oh.
You know? And I'm not too clear about France doing good things. Now, we do see Kronos going through Italy, and we see Kronos going through Switzerland. So there's something big going on in terms of the rulers of Switzerland and stuff. I understand that the mafia boss from Corleone just died, and this is Benghazi over here, where Kronos is happening, as if Benghazi were important in the world, and it isn't. Right? Now, as we get to Europe, we see that the Admetos here runs on the western edge of Africa. I would say that I would stay out of all of these countries. You know, you don't want to go anywhere near them. You'll notice that this... I'll cut that out. This, I think my mouse is getting a little too sensitive here. Let's get back over here.
Is it on the blank?
No, it's just being too sensitive. You'll notice that we've got Sun and Saturn and Cupido and Venus, but they're marginal. But the Sun and Saturn goes through through Algeria and goes through Nigeria. So there is crap going on down there. It's not good. That Sun Saturn goes right through Barcelona for the people for the Catalonians wanting to get out. So something to note.
Gary, can you take a look at South Africa and Madagascar?
Yes. Something to note is that Northern Ireland gets the Hades, right? Birmingham and London gets the Hades, right? But the Kronos goes through Edinburgh and Glasgow, etc., and on the eastern side of the country. But this is the ruling parts. So the United Kingdom does not fare well, and they're going to get very poor. Whereas Scotland might break away and do quite well for itself. Okay, we've got Neptune going right through Amsterdam on the Brussels-German border, running down through Marseille, etc. And you've got Hades and Neptune running through the Marseille area. That floods possibility of widespread corruption, possibility of damages through water, are very prevalent there, right? You're going to have issues with corruption and floods and poisonings in Amsterdam and the western part of the Flemish areas. You're going to have issues with power structures. Notice Pluto going through Berlin, Prague, Budapest, Vienna, right? It's all Pluto. These guys start kicking up their power. They start amping up, all right?
It's all about Brexit.
It is all about the poorness of England with the Brexit. Yes, England really cut their nose off.
And Ireland is the big sticking point right now.
The
border between Northern and Southern Ireland, some people want to put an actual wall border there, and then some people say that'll destroy the economy, so they can't do that, and they can't agree on it.
You can't agree on anything over there. But it's true that Hades goes right through, so we might see a rise in sectarian violence in Northern Ireland. And also Reykjavik has got some issues. Pluto goes right through the middle of Iceland, and Reykjavik is just above the Kronos Hades business, which means the government ignores something. If one of those volcanoes goes, it's a real big deal. I've been reading that they've been trying to reforest Iceland ever since the Vikings were there, and they've been trying, and they can't get it going. The 30 years reforestation has been failing. So it's like, oh, that's not too good. Now, notice that Vulcanus, which rules raw power, goes through Stockholm, right, Kiev, right, and then back down towards Baghdad and the western side of Jerusalem and stuff. Remember, I mentioned it goes through that whole Kurdish area along with that Zeus. That Zeus is guns and whatnot. So you can see the whole business in the Ukraine comes to another head. That's going to heat up. And you're going to see a revolution in the Southern Caucasus because of such. Get out of here. We want to go to Asia. Right. And I'll note that last year we had Zeus going right through Pyongyang and Seoul. This year we have Kronos going through it on the one side, and the Hades on the other side going through places like Shanghai and going through Manila. Now we can understand the Hades going through Manila. Duarte is not a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real bad strong man. But what's going on with it in China? Why is it going through Shanghai? Cleanest city on the planet. You know?
Really?
Yeah. Shanghai, they put you in jail if you spit in the street. Literally. Because the Chinese like to spit. They have laws. It is one of the... It's very draconian in their laws. You know?
I think it's Singapore.
Oh, I'm sorry. Singapore. You're right. Yeah, Shanghai is shit. But you also know that the Hades is going through Taiwan, right? And it's going near the border with North Korea.
Yes.
If we start looking at pictures, like midpoints, like Hades, Pluto, they stands right on the capital of North Korea. But if you'll notice that the Pluto is going right through the southern island of Japan, and Zeus goes right over Osaka and near Tokyo, and then up to the northern islands.
Can you say more about North Korea and Taiwan?
The North Korean thing with the Taiwan is basically you've got two energies. Taiwan is going to get hit with a pollution issue or something going on environmentally, or corruption comes to the fore. With North Korea, they're actually going to get some recognition on a higher level, as well as that, because Kronos goes through there, which means the governments have to pay attention, right? But it's Japan that you need to pay attention to, because it's Japan that has Zeus going through it directly on the one side and Pluto going through the other side, and they're going to change the constitution. They're going to get rid of the self-defense clauses and start arming themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They've already got the laws ready to go, and that makes very good sense. So, and then we've got Uranus skirting the border of Japan and the sea on the eastern side where they had the previous earthquake. Where you see Uranus, the possibility of earthquakes exists very strongly. So the fact that this one is right on an earthquake zone makes that Uranus very scary in general, right, for those guys. The Sun Saturn here, whoops, all right. The Sun Saturn here, you'll notice that it goes through Bali and all those areas, part of the Indonesian archipelago, and that sort of stuff. It goes over Hong Kong, right, and then goes over right close to Beijing, and all of these areas where power is getting consolidated. Right, in Indonesia, the military is consolidating further. We move up into Hong Kong. The Chinese government basically put their own guy in power at this point, and there was a big movement, democracy movement that got squished. It wasn't badly squished, but it was squished enough not to be effective. And then as we move up further, we notice that the president of China is consolidating power as well, more so than any other time in history of the Chinese. We see the Neptune now coming up across this border. We mentioned this as well. Keep that in motion, because this Neptune is water damages. There could be a tsunami going through here very, very easily. Very easily. Now, South Africa. We get down to South Africa. I was interested in that. In South Africa, we have Mercury crossing over Cape Town, precisely. And then we get to the western side of the country, right? And we have the Cupido crossing, like bracketing the other side. So basically, we get the idea that, well, South Africa is going to be a place, a communication place, travel, lots of talks about it, people talking about communication moving through and this and that. We get further to the west, to like the homeland and Swaziland and stuff like that, and it's more about family and communications. You know, you've got Venus going through Petersburg, and that sort of stuff. That this area is actually very nice and previously had a lot of problems. Now, if we go a little bit further north into, Mozambique, that's where we start seeing the Sun Saturn. We see Zimbabwe with the Sun Saturn. There's the capital, right? And then we start looking at Madagascar. And Madagascar is Uranus going right through the middle of it with Pluto, and Cronos coming down through the bottom. And so that Uranus can be very, very destructive. As I said, there is a disease growing down there, and we have combinations in the chart for pandemics, suddenly arising pandemics. So it's an interesting thing to note. Here.
Where are you going to go there?
That's a good possibility.
Yeah, but you see, this whole Mercury thing is nice. So it's good for travel, but be careful. You can only go further west to the edge of the country. Do not go into Mozambique, and do not go to Zimbabwe, Mozambique.
Or Madagascar.
Madagascar is another thing altogether. It has not, it's not the same combinations, but it's just a very jumpy.
How about Kenya?
Kenya. So we've got Cronos on one side, and we've still got the Zeus business. See, the border between Kenya and Somalia, I wouldn't go anywhere near. There's Mogadishu, right? And look at the Pluto. And here, this is Zeus. So that's not very good. It's very warlike. But this area here, the western part, like Nairobi and the capital, you know, and going west towards Uganda and stuff, not too shabby. Go too far, get past Lake Victoria, that's a crap. No, you don't want to be there at all. Do not go to Tanzania. It's not a very good idea at all. But yes, you can go to Kenya and actually have a good time. Just stay away from the west, from the eastern part of the country.
Botswana looks good.
Yes. Yes. And central Congo, no, not a good idea. But the country you really want to look at, of course, is Nigeria for the oil. And because all the Western countries have been pulling out, right? And when we look at that, we'll see the Neptune line. Here's the Neptune line. See the Neptune line going right through Niger and right through Nigeria. And right down the river, too. This is the river where they keep on breaking the pipeline and starting fires and stuff. You know? But there's no Hades this year. The Hades is much further west, going to Chad and Libya and stuff. So they're not poisoning things. The corruption is just going to be beyond belief. And they might even find more oil, unbelievably. It's not so good. And plus, Algeria is a mess. Algeria's going to turn out to be a real mess. That's on that stuff. Okay, guys. Any questions about any of this stuff?
Is it good to travel to Ireland and Great Britain?
You can't go to Northern Ireland. Southern Ireland is great. In Britain, you're going to get a great bargain because the pound is getting hammered. And it's going to continue to get hammered. I don't see Britain doing anything good because of the Haiti.
Mostly economic.
It's mostly economic, and plus, you know, there'll be some other poverty types of things. Let me get this thing out of here altogether. This is not too good. I want to put pretty short. There we go. And let's get this back to normal. Go back home. And we're back. That's good. All right, any other questions, guys? Yes?
Again, reiterating, you said there was going to be good news at the end of 2018? November? What is it?
Yeah, all right, November is very good because of Jupiter-Pluto. It's not, whereas the midterm elections may change things, and they will, because we are undergoing lots of change this year. The effect is not as strong as you may imagine. In other words, will it have a lasting effect? No, it's not going to have. We basically have 2 years ahead of us of a slide downward. After 2019, we turn. There may be a war in 2019 to 2020. But one way or another, we will then slowly be on the upswing. Breakthroughs begin to happen around 2021, leading to 2024. And at 2024, when the Poseidon crosses that 15, right, and the Neptune crosses the cardinals, it's the culmination of the corruption. It's the culmination of the religious change. It's the culmination of all these things, and a lot of truth comes out. I see the truth really beginning to start to appear after 2021, right? And it's a different kind of truth. And I don't mean like newsy truth. I mean like a truths where stuff's been suppressed for a very long time.
What kind of war you mentioned?
Well, we're not out of it. Nostradamus said in the 15th century that after 2001, the next 25 years, Mars and Saturn would rule at will, literally. And Mars and Saturn in that day meant war and famine. The four horsemen of the apocalypse was Mars and Saturn. So rule at will. So the idea of us not being in war since 2000 is the anomaly. We have been in a continuous war, but that's the United States. The rest of the world is facing it as well. And, you know, like, for example, what occurred in Philippines where, you know, now they're claiming that they're ISIS. They never were ISIS. They were always a revolutionary Muslim force the last 50 years in the Philippines fighting for independence because they don't like the Catholic North. Simple as that. And Duarte is, you know, such a strong man, so to speak. He's trying to grind everything out, and all he's done, succeeded in doing, by threatening the city, they unified the city, and they withheld fighter jets for 3 months, 4 months. So what have they done? They've just dispersed to the countryside. This is a standard Filipino tactic. These people are great as guerrillas, you know, in the countryside, disrupting things. So the southern Philippines are going to be a mess for a long time, and they presaged the kind of world we're coming into. Strong man like Duarte, being a pain in the ass, changing things. So the United States will change over in the elections, it will change over some parts of the government. More than the one to get is the House, not the Senate, because the House is the bellwether, represents where the country's going to go. But we're still not going to see change. You know, we still don't see change. Now, the one virtue of Saturn, though, is that truth gets better. Once we hit Christmas time, and Saturn goes into Capricorn, right, truth gets better. Saturn doesn't like liars. Saturn doesn't care what the information is. It just wants it accurate, painfully accurate. So it isn't as if Saturn isn't a liar, but Saturn is not Neptune. Saturn will not try and change the truth. Saturn will say, it's like that CNN commercial, this is an apple, no matter what you say, it's still an apple. You know, you can put noise in front of it, you can put confetti in front, it's still an apple. And that's a very Saturnine message. So we will get fundamental truth after the first of the year. We'll start seeing more and more scandals. Yes, another 60 days, less than 60 days. We're also going to see scandals breaking open this year as well. They crack open. An area of, it's one thing if the bank is ripping you off and you don't know about it. It's another thing when the bank is ripping you off and you don't know about it. You see what I mean? There's a difference.
You can't sue them.
It makes you feel crappy. To see this cut. So we've been living in a dream in many respects. Next year, the scandals start to break, and we start saying, oh my God, you know, how could this get any crazier? But it does.
So was I out of the room when you answered the question as to why Trump didn't get, you know,
off?
Yeah.
Right, I didn't get to that. But I can sum up very quickly. We have the wrong chart. He obfuscated his own horoscope. That whole prediction was predicated on him having 28 degrees Leo rising, and it looks like he's got about 17 Leo rising. So he doesn't get out altogether because the Saturn's going to station on that by half square and all kinds of stuff. He's already had an eclipse on it and stuff, which makes good sense. But no, he didn't have the killer combination. But he is still up for grabs. In other words, you know, like I said, the same agenda happens under Pence.
Right.
You know? As a matter of fact, if Pence were president, it would be more organized. And much more thing. And the trick, of course, is Saturn Kronos is going to happen. And when Saturn Kronos happens, poor government institutions, losses of the authorities, loss of sovereign persons, leading an independent person's hindered, high age, old master, long time or duration, late fulfillment, the principal formula for the great landowner, great obstruction, formula for the needy, is the loss or the death of a great personage, of an old person, or old leader. So that's why old leaders are going away. That's why they're all consolidating the power and stuff. They're getting ready for this combination. And it's going to hit a bunch of times. So he could go under that, because you see, the other thing to note is that that Kronos-Saturn bit, this is Trump's son, basically. He's right over here. This is meridian. We're at 20. Let's got to go a couple more degrees here. Here is approximately, this is approximately Trump's sun. And you'll notice that it is reflecting that Kronos. It is reflecting Saturn in Hades. It is reflecting where the Saturn is going to come up and station. So, he's not out of the woods. As a matter of fact, one of the things we often say in astrology is when you have Saturn conjunct, opposed, or squaring your sun, don't do anything. Let the universe act on you. Do what the universe wants you to do, and it'll work out okay. Right? If you do something under the combination, when the Saturn leaves your sign, leaves that square, the sign of the square, you have 7 years of shit having to fix it up for having blown it. He elected himself president with Saturn opposite his sun, which is why I didn't even think he was going to win the election in the first place. Once that Saturn gets into Capricorn, he's got to pay the piper for the next 7 years, whatever that fee is. Now, it's unfortunate. I don't think he's going to go to jail, per se. It's very unfortunate, because I really am a firm believer that you should atone for your sins. But I always have had the sense that he's going to drop dead and not have any realization of what he's fucking done to the world. Right? But he has screwed his family, and he has screwed those that will follow him. You know? And one of the things, of course, is, like I said, this guy has all the hallmarks of somebody who's heavily factored and relies upon a public persona for that business to operate, a certain public perception. And everything I see is that his businesses are all down uniformly, 30% across the board. And that Ivana's, you know, the whole Ivana, clothing line and stuff? Ivana's clothing completely has bombed since he's been elected. Like, beyond belief. Just like falling through the warehouses full of stuff that nobody's buying. And previously, she was selling. You know, because it was a popular line. Not anymore. So he's basically, you know, except for the fact that the inheritance thing that will probably come through with the tax bill, he is family as well as the country. So, but he might have, he screwed his family 30 years ago when he went into the casino business and all this other jazz. When he went at right angles to his father's dictates. His father, Fred, was a smart guy. You know, his father, Fred, made the money and didn't spend it. You know, I was witness to situations where people knew the family and always bitched about the son. That kid was going to ruin everything and ruin the family. And they all liked the father. Mostly they liked the father because the father kept the blacks and the Jews out of the housing developments in Brooklyn and Queens. And they lost that case with the federal government. The federal government sued the Trump family for discrimination, and they settled in order not, because it was so rigged against them. They were going to lose that case so badly. The government should have never settled. They would have gotten a lot more out of that. But that was Fred. That was Fred Trump. And he was a smart guy, and he was a no-good SOB. He was as racist as they came. And, you know, unfortunately, the son is not like the father. He's worse. The apple fell far from the tree with the same genes. Anyway, the good news here, there is good news, leave you guys with something reasonable here, is we have Poseidon in the node running with the Jupiter, which indicates it's very, very nice, aligned with reasonable and prudent people, connected with philosophically educated people, and slightly off the cardinal axis. That part's actually very, very good. The Jupiter-Poseidon running in conjunction during this period is a very good thing, because Jupiter-Poseidon is wisdom. To act with wisdom, to do things with wisdom.
We're still in 2018
here. We're in the current time. This is now. And so there are actually people running around that know what they're doing. All right?
We're all here.
There are actual people running around that know what they're doing, but it's in a time when the details are going to matter a lot, and nobody's going to be able to pay attention to the details. It was a very difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing to read the news today and to deal with the news in general. And it is a very difficult thing because of the biases that are all over the place. Mm-hmm. But you can do it. All right? First of all, understand that how is news gathered? How is it paid for? Right? What the guys that are doing the fake news object to is they object to the model of an editor who is a gateway for news to come through. They'd rather not have any gateway at all and directly put whatever it is that's out there. But when you look at a news organization, the traditional news organization is you sell advertising, you make money, you pay for your staff. Your staff is now funded to go out into the field and figure out what the hell is going on. The editor is to make sure that what they turn in is reasonable and is it balanced against other stuff and whether it's fact-checked. Right? We can see this in the New York Times. We can see this in the Post. We can see this in other organizations like BBC and Reuters. But when you look at the Post is owned by Jeff Bezos. The Post doesn't have to make money anymore. It's just a mouthpiece for Bezos. We look at the New York Times, and the New York Times used to be run by a family, but now is much more corporate. But the New York Times actually is an honest model. Right? We go on to Reuters and BBC and API. These are honest models. They're paying their staff with legitimate funds that come from known sources. Everything else is up for grabs. And remember, Yahoo and CNN and all these other, well, not CNN, Yahoo and Facebook and all these other, just they have no news staffs. And they don't have anybody trained who's being in an editorial faction, which is why they're so manipulable, right? And this is a thing. So when you're reading the news, you do have to realize that the old newspapers and the old news organizations do have a very big bias. They want to see the world run a certain way. They want to see surety in the world. They don't want to see it upset in the world, even though it sells more newspapers for them, that isn't under their own control. But there is no alternative. And this is the important part. Right? If you think of something like Fox News, did you know in their published papers, right, they say that they only produce 11 hours of news a week. The rest of it is infotainment. That's how they're allowed to be as biased as they are to the FCC. Because remember, the fair use clauses are still in effect. Those laws are still on the books. So Fox News gets around it by being an editorial-based organization. Now, same thing with CNN. CNN has a lot of stringers out in the field, but how many people are they actually paying to get hardcore news? Basically, with CNN, get the same thing. It's like 11 or 12 hours of news a week, right? And the rest of it is infotainment, where you get a bunch of talking heads who are no longer talking factually, right? So both the left and the right have these news models that do not rely on news. So how do you get information? Well, you have to go in knowing the biases of the organizations that you're looking at. So if you're looking at Fox News, you have to be aware that they're extremely biased in certain levels. If you're looking at the New York Times, you have to be aware that they're extremely biased to the northeast of the United States. Right? If you're looking at Pravda coming out of Russia, you have to understand that Putin is putting in things that he wants to see. So when you read the news, or if you look at the news, you have to look between the lines. You do have to create your own news out of this massive raw information that's coming at you.
What do you know about the Huffington Post?
The Huffington Post is another, basically it's a West Coast variant of the Northeast style of gathering news, which is to say it's highly factual. They do a lot of fact checking. They don't look into stories having to do with the religious right. They look at the stories having to do that promote things that Anna Huffington wants to see occur, which is fine. So what they do report on is factual. And this is the same thing with the New York Times. What they do report on is factual, but what are they focusing on? And that's how come Trump got elected, because their focus wasn't on the issues that the guys in northern Michigan were focused on. You know? What was it? Steve Bannon got his great insights because he ran a gaming company. And his gaming company failed, and he tried to figure out, why my gaming company failed? And he realized he wasn't hitting the right audience, which were all disaffected males between age 20 and 40. Mm-hmm. Unmarried, marginally employed. And he realized there were millions of them out there. Mm-hmm. And that's what he organized. And that's what he got going. How many people watched American Horror Story this season, Cult? You should have all watched it. It opens up with the election and the left wing going crazy that they lost, and a cult arises on the right. And it's so press. The week they had to take a segment out because it was a large scale massacre by a right wing white guy right after Las Vegas. 3 days after Las Vegas, they had to take it off and re-edit it. They were so on to what is going on, and the final analysis was basically that we're all getting run by cults. And if you think of the news media as another cult, you can get around it and get the truth. You have to understand the bias of the organization. Like I said, some of them are mildly biased, like the New York Times is biased to the East Coast view, right? They'll ignore news that's important to somebody in Louisiana, right? The Fox business is just entertainment. Well, I'm going to tell you, Rupert Murdoch, the most important thing, his job, is to pick the daily model in the London Mirror that shows her breasts every day. They always have on page 4 of the London Mirror, they have the model that shows her breasts. Right? That's his biggest job. His sons wanted to get it out, and they say, no, that's the money. But he goes through those photos every single day to pick the one that's going to be on page 4 of the London Mirror. Right? This is his big thing in life. So you have to understand these guys' biases. And if you understand their biases, you can get a sense of what's missing, what's going on. I was extremely fortunate when I was in the 7th and 8th grade, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade of grammar school, because we had a guy who was a Cuban refugee who was the president of Havana University, and they had he came up and they gave him a job in my school system. They had nothing for him. So they made him a vice principal in the elementary school to teach the advanced kids. And so every day I got to hang around with Dr. Cordasco. He was great because he let us eat candy. And all we did in this class for 2 hours was either read the New York Times or the Herald Tribune. And then he taught us how to read it using editions of Pravda. We'd come up with the daily Pravda, and he said, here's what the Russians are saying, and here's what the New York Times is saying, and here's what the Daily Tribune, the Herald Tribune is saying. Yeah.
Wow.
And the thing was, you can see that the Herald Tribune had the best writing and didn't give a shit about anything. Pravda really obscured stuff, but they always had the truth. It was an amazing thing. They would say the truth, and then they refute it and change it around halfway through the thing. So they can never be accused of being wrong, right? And then the New York Times would come along, and the New York Times is basically really good for getting shipping schedules. I'm kidding. In the 50s and the 60s, the New York Times had the best shipping schedules. You know when those ships were coming and going? It was on the front page every single day. You know, they dropped the original Times ball was to let you know when the ships were leaving. It was the paper of record. But then when the Herald Tribune went out of business, the New York Times took up most of their staff and became something else. And became half entertainment and half news. But yet, in this day and age, right now, your best information is going to come from AP, used to be UPI, but AP and the New York Times. They're the only two institutions that are consistent in what they're doing right now. They're just, particularly AP. And you follow a story coming out of AP on your telephone, you should do that, because what will happen is you'll see it'll change every 20 minutes. As more information comes in, as another reporter files another note, mm-hmm. and you see it changing. And you get information that they take out later.
Yes.
You know, you get stuff like, you know, oh, and the shooter was wearing a clown suit. You never see that again. That kind of thing. You know, they scrub that all out later on. So with the raw news feeds, if you can get as much closer to the raw news feeds that are coming in, you're much better off for a thing. And then, second thing is news analysis. Find good news analysis. You can't get enough of that stuff. And basically, guys like Hank Friedman and folks like that, Krugman's too far on the left, but these guys are really the voice of reason in many respects, because they're like saying, hey, guys, you got to look at the rest of the world. You got to look at the rest of the world. You know, we're doing this wrong, or we're doing this right, and you get a look at the rest of the world. So, in terms of newsiness, truth, and all this other jazz, we all grew up with three channels on the television and a local newspaper. That doesn't exist anymore. Just doesn't. And it is a world where we're going to continue to be lied to for a very long time. So, one virtue of all this is, in this room, you're all at the end of things. We're all at the end of things. I mean, there isn't a lot that's going to happen in this world that's going to affect us one way or the other. Truly. You know? But the children and the millennials, God help us all. God help us all. I feel really bad for those kids. I don't see, and it's my own children as well, get screwed up in this. I don't see it getting much better in general until we get to 2021. And then after that, 2024 will be the next big ringer, and then 2027. And then the world actually does open up. That Poseidon passing 15 degrees of Scorpio is one of the most important things in our lifetime. We've only seen two really important things dealing with cultural and spiritual things in the world in our lifetimes. And that was in the early 70s when Poseidon crossed the cardinals in the first place, right? And this period coming up in 2024. Like, the 70s were a wake-up call. The United States was no longer the victorious country from World War II, is what the 70s said, you know? So, what's the thing? Any final questions? All right. Yes?
So Bitcoin.
What? Yes. Bitcoin.
No.
Bitcoin's very interesting. I think that the banks and the institutions, on one hand, want to embrace it because it gets them out from the government, but on the other hand, too many thieves and crooks are using it.
It's another one of those new sciences.
It's another one of those new sciences that the implications are yet to happen. I don't think Bitcoin is the last word. The blockchain concept is strong. And I think that Bitcoin is going to be like a gem, like jade is. But gold is yet to be discovered. You know what I mean? In other words, a true virtual currency is yet to rise. And right now, right, the currencies are balanced against each other, and gold isn't supposed to be there anymore. But I don't know one currency trader anywhere who doesn't look at the gold futures every single day. You know, they're balanced. They look at gold or platinum, like a side glance, while they're looking at the mark and the euro and everything else, you know. But, oh. So there's still that basic sense that we're tied to a fundamental quantity or fundamental metal kind of a thing. But you're right. In the end, like I said, like Bitcoin's like a precious stone, but it's not the holy grail yet.
The Vedic astrologers, and I know very little about Vedic, but is it James Brahma? Yeah, he's been saying a fair amount about Taurus, about Uranus going into Taurus, and what that will mean for gold.
It's going to shake things up. I'm pointing out that Uranus-Apollon combination is way cool in June. Yeah. So it'll be interesting at that point in time. Markets do get real volatile this summer. Mm-hmm. Coming into the summer, they get volatile. And if you could take advantage of the volatility, but I wouldn't trust any information coming out about the markets because of the Neptune Mercury. Oh. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Great audience. You persevered. Grab some food on the way out.